It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running on this, the 12th day of March, 2020. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday here on the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And HeadOn.live is a great place to hang out, be part of the chat room if you'd like. If you've never been there before, click on chat room. Just go to the main, chat room or main page, whatever. Get there. If you've never done it before, pick out a screen name and a password and jump in. Jimmy and Squeaky are waiting for you. They're the early arrivers this afternoon. And you'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become man cave because it's 80 degrees in Northern California. And I guess time to make sure that the air conditioning's working properly. Hi, I'm Bob. And my, oh my, what a great speech that wasn't last night by Corona Claudius. Yeah, COVID Claudius. COVID Caligula. Yeah, he really sucked. But you probably didn't need me to tell you that. You could have checked the stock market this morning to find out how thoroughly he sucked. And there was a lot of suckitude. At one point in time, we got within about, 1,500 points of the stock market completely erasing Donald Trump from its memory. Yeah, we got quite close, really, to the closing numbers for January the 19th, 2017. It was really hell among the yearlings today there on Wall Street with the titans of finance and captains of industry. Oh yeah, as they begged for the closing bell to ring. Well, when it finally did, the masters of the universe, the titans of industry, the captains of finance there on Wall Street. We're down about 9.99%. I think they probably rang the bell like a second early just to keep it from hitting an even 10. But that's just me. And no, they'd never do something like that, would they? The circuit breaker kicked in this morning, 15 minutes into trading, because within 15 minutes it had lost 7%. Yeah. Well, now. Wait a minute, I'm getting ahead of myself. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out this afternoon. Thanks go out to our subscribers for the 12th day of the month. That's Paul and Gary. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Gary. Awfully glad to have you along on the, because this is the thin part of the subscriber month, where we have one or two subscribers on any given day. Thank you, Paul and Gary, for being subscribers here on the 12th day of the month. If you'd like to give them a little bit of company, they would welcome it. And it's real easy to do. It's all right there on the main page now of the headon.live. There's a box that says make this donation monthly. And, first appearance by Stan the Studio Stinkbug, because it's getting warm again. Because it did. We got all the way up to 72 degrees here. Mm-hmm. That was special. We're rapidly approaching naked radio weather. And I know you're all just absolutely horrified at the very thought of that. God knows Agnes is. So anyway, the fundraising goal for this evening, trying to keep up with the week, is at $495. So that means we've got $95 worth of Tuesday to finish, yesterday to finish, and today. But that's where we stand, and if we could knock that down some, it would be, oh, that would be magnificent. Because, bill paying. But, as Randy in PA points out, cash is king, but it loses about 6% per year due to inflation, according to shadowstats.com. Conversely, the stock market indices are not adjusted for inflation, so they naturally, being resources, would grow by 6%. And now that we're into percentiles, my little deciphering challenge noggin is beginning to hurt a little bit. But the fact of the matter is, the Fed stepped in and spent about $1 trillion of, you know, your money. And that prompted Lady B to write in. Explain it to us, or if you have a horn listener who knows, please. Explain how the stock market works like this. I read they pumped $1 trillion into it to stabilize it, and $1 trillion was gone in 10 minutes. I mean, how and what the fuck? We have money to do that, but we can't afford to ramp up production to make enough coronavirus testing kits? $1 trillion to help business people, but we can't afford universal health care? Dude, how long do we have to keep pretending like our leaders don't have utter contempt for the rest of us? There's contempt. There's always going to be contempt among our betters for those of us further down the social and economic ladder. I mean, God damn it. They know which fork to use with the shrimp and which one to use with the oysters. Us hoi polloi don't know. Hell, if you don't have contempt, if you can't be exclusive, what's the point of having the club? But the simple answer as to that now disappeared $1 trillion is that gone in 10 minutes, like Lady B asked. I mean, how and what the fuck? Let's try to understand this in terms that are more, shall we say, prosaic. If you have a meth head, and you give the meth head $1,000, the meth head will then go out and spend the whole $1,000 on meth, which they will then use, and then they will have no meth again. Use is proportional to the amount of meth you can lay your hands on. The more meth you have, the more meth you do. The more crack you have, the more crack you smoke. The more powder blow you've got, the more powder blow you snort. Or to put it in terms that COVID Caligula could understand, the more Adderall you have, the more Adderall you crush. It is what William S. Burroughs in Naked Lunch referred to as the algebra of need. And no matter if you've ever known anyone dealing with the hells of addiction, no matter how dope sick they get, no matter how dope sick the heroin addict gets, no matter how freaked out the meth head gets, the crack head, none of them are ever going to feel all the way down to the marrow of their bones the crushing yearning that a hedge fund manager feels, that a captain of finance feels. Because that kind of avarice is the most debilitating, ruinous form of aching want. Well, that's true, that's true. A little clarity there. Steve in New York says that Fed $1 trillion doesn't come from the government. It comes from the Fed buying government bonds. Now, the government technically just incurred another $1 trillion in debt. The difference is that this debt is probably not callable. Another way of saying not callable means it's just gone. And as Brother Deacon Asa pointed out earlier, your national debt just went up to $21 trillion from $20 trillion overnight. Talk about spending like a drunken sailor. Each and every one of these so-called fiscal conservatives. Refer to Everett Dirksen, who was mentioned a couple of nights ago on this program. A million here and a million there, and pretty soon it starts adding up to real money. Randy in PA says, a peon pipes up and says, please, sir, I want some more. And Fox News says, eat your gruel and go listen to Tucker Carlson. Are there no more workhouses? Megan offers the following, Lady B in the stock market. If you think of it like Monopoly money, it makes it easier to go down. Scott in San Diego says, I have a question, Bob. Why is it that every time I read or hear the admonition, don't touch your face, every square inch of my face commences to itch fiercely? P.S. Trump's performance, and it was a performance, was beyond horrible. 10 or 11 minutes of him sitting there looking all orange and stuff, trying like hell to appear even remotely presidential in a misbegotten effort to bring information and calm to a populace that's losing its shit, was beyond dismal. Oh, and his penitent little boy act fooled no one. Did you notice that they were, that they laid on the orange number 12 particularly thick yesterday? Did you notice that his voice was a little bit more rough and gravelly than it ordinarily is? They persist in claiming that he hasn't been tested, even though he has come in direct contact with, among other things, the PR scumbag for Jair Bolsonaro, who, as soon as he got home from Mar-a-Lago, he got sick and was tested and immediately found to be, that's right, infected. Totally unsubstantiated rumor coming from Scary Jerry. Getting dicey, they just shut down Miami-Dade College Medical Center. Trump had an unscheduled stopover, and the school has been locked down security-wise. Stay tuned. But that's a totally unsubstantiated rumor, courtesy of Scary Jerry. Not callable, what that phrase means, Steve explains, that means that the government does guarantee the debt as it does treasury notes and bonds that they trade in the open market. In other words, I think he means doesn't. In other words, even if the government defaulted, it wouldn't technically be a default in the same way if we defaulted on publicly traded debt. I think that's another way of saying the money's gone. Brother Deacon Asen, taking note of the 9.99% drop. Stock market down 9.99%. You never told us Herb Cain was in Trump's cabinet. There's only room for one of them coloreds in that their God Emperor's cabinet, and that's Ben Carson, because he's got a portrait of him and his BFF Jesus. Oh, yeah. Here's a way to try to visualize it. How many 40-foot trailers packed with cash are still missing from the Iraq occupation? Billions? Vanished. Wonder how many 40-foot trailers stacked with bricks, filled with bricks of shrink-wrapped $100 bills it would take to make up a trillion. But 27 trillion to... No, that would... For health care, that would crush the American economy. Which is Wall Street speak for, oh my God, you mean I can't buy a 275-foot yacht this year? Right. Darlene says, that sounded like your Ronald Reagan impersonation there, Bob, but I guess these Republicans all tend to meld together and as a logical result sound alike. I'm kind of working on the fly, Darlene, so, you know. So now, last night we learned that March Madness was going to be played in empty gymnasiums. Well, as of this afternoon, there is no more March Madness. Yeah. Broadway has gone dark. The various conference championship tournaments for men's and women's basketball has been nixed. Here in West Virginia, Jim Justice, the governor of West Virginia, who back when he wasn't governor of West Virginia and we had the derecho in 2012... leveraged his power as the state's only billionaire at a time when hundreds of thousands of West Virginians were without power to get the National Guard down on the golf course at the Greenbrier to pick up rubbish and tree limbs and stuff so that the PGA, he could go on and have his PGA golf tournament. He finally decided to cancel the boys and girls basketball tournaments this year. Social distancing is still something that we hillbillies are trying to learn. I had to go to the store today. And I must admit, I have to give credit, and I will put this photo up on social media at some point. I was making my way through Wally World, just because it's a little closer to home than Kroger is. But I was making my way through Wally World, and oddly enough, the candy aisle is the same aisle as the toilet paper aisle. You can't make me say bathroom tissue. You just can't. So I'm wheeling along there, and I turn into the toilet paper aisle. I wasn't even planning on getting any toilet paper, but I was going to try to pick up it. Oh, my God, they finally made the dark chocolate Reese's Cups available, not just in a mixed bag. We were buying the mixed bags for a while that had the white chocolate miniature Reese's, the regular miniature Reese's, and the dark chocolate ones. And then, you know, I might get one of those because the dark chocolate Reese's Cups were very popular. And then I'd be left with the remnant of the bag, which was all the white chocolate Reese's that nobody, and by nobody I mean Agnes, didn't want. She doesn't care for white chocolate. It's, you know, all the guilt with none of the flavor. But now they've started making these Reese's Ultra Reese's Thins dark chocolate peanut butter cups, and so I was going to pick up some of those.
and it just happens, like I said, to be the same aisle where the toilet paper is. And the toilet paper aisle, which had been largely still stocked for a bit, I mean, things get here. When it comes to West Virginia, things get here last. But like I said, it's the funniest thing I've seen in a while. As I look down the long, empty shelves of the entire left side of the aisle, there was not a single package of toilet paper to be had. But sitting in the middle of it all was a six-pack of Corona beer. I kid you not. I had to stop and take a photograph, and I did. I don't know who the anonymous prankster is, but that person, well, it gets a cowbell. And like I said, here in a little, maybe after the program or something, I'll post it just because that kind of made me proud of my home state. Yeah. And so I eventually, and at the same time, they had a crash in their cash register system. So I had to use the despised self-checkout, and that had lines because, God forbid, they would actually put a human open up a couple of the actual checkout lanes that are still there. So I'm standing in line, but I'm standing about 10 feet back from the person in front of me in line, and a woman comes along and says, "Are you in line?" I said, "Yes, I'm in line." She said, "Well, come on up." I said, "No." I said, "I'm practicing social distancing." "Oh, I heard about that." I said, "Yeah, it's tough to learn. It's tough to stop touching our faces and just touching stuff in general. And it's and so I'm trying to and so all of a sudden she backs up. I'm like, "See, we can all learn to do this together." Lee in New York says, "Bob, you need to go to the Vulcan salute. It's the Jewish priestly blessing. Live long and prosper." That makes perfectly good sense to me. No more elbow bumping, even. Yeah. Here's a giant what the fuck. Joy Reid on Twitter. Casey Hunt of NBC News just reported that Republicans' objections to the House Democrats' emergency coronavirus bill include issues related to abortion. What does that have to do with COVID-19? Oh, dear God. We'll get into that, too. I have a feeling that within a week or so, the Capitol Hill will largely be vacant. You know, there's a spring break coming on. That's probably why we haven't shut down schools in West Virginia, because we're going to do it anyway as of tomorrow afternoon, and then the kids will be out for a week. Like I said, I guess. The missing $1 trillion. Suman says the trillion is not gone. It has just been redistributed to other traders who betted on put and call options. Come on, Horn community. It never really disappears, does it? Megan letting us know that both the state governments of both Delaware and Virginia have now declared states of emergency ahead of the pandemic. Kyle asking, why is it that the one time common sense actually prevails, shutting down of events and places where large crowds of people gather to prevent the spread of a virus, restricted travel, etc., the people are actually losing their minds because apparently we're being too safe? The ideas that come from whatever passes for brains of the stupids in this country will never cease to amaze me. But in all seriousness, listen to your local governors, mayors, etc., and do what you can to not expose yourself and others to this virus. And you would, maybe I was just sensitized to it, but it seemed like there were a whole lot more elderly folks walking through Walmart today. Kyle says socialism for the rich, rugged individualism for everybody else because we can't pay our lawmakers off. If we had the money to pay them off, we'd already have Medicare for all and free college, living wage, all kinds of shit, but fuck us because we don't. This is why we need to get money out of damn politics. Sigh. We're fucked, aren't we? Yeah, I know. But now, yeah, Kyle catches on to the important stuff. Dark chocolate Reese's by themselves in a bag. Ooh, this is a game changer. Yeah, only they're not like regular Reese's cups. They don't have any paper. They don't sit in the little paper cups. They're called Reese's Thins. They're the same size as a regular Reese's cup, but they're much thinner. And that means that the dark chocolate and the peanut butter, I think, mix much more effectively. Flavio noting, odds are he caught it. Incubation period is 5 to 14 days. Jair Bolsonaro, Fabio Weingarten, Matt Gaetz, Doug Collins, Mark Meadows, that's five people who tested positive. They all shook hands with COVID Claudius. All the COVID-monitored people who have met Trump in the past week. At Talking Points memo, Josh Kavinsky reporting, it's the great equalizer. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, weak or powerful. You're susceptible to the novel coronavirus, regardless of station or caste. Trump has met with several people who are being monitored for the virus and at least one who has tested positive over the past week. That includes Jair Bolsonaro, Fabio Weingarten, Matt Gaetz, Doug Collins, Mark Meadows. Yeah. Oh, and this, an interesting little... Oh, dear God, Trish Regan's still there. Make her go away. Stop it, Spock. Dave sent this little audio snippet along. European countries are doing what they can to try to keep people informed about the disease. They're handling it about a bajillion times better than this misbegotten, wildly inept government. Here's the president of Serbia trying to give a talk, a press conference, I guess you would say, on the pandemic. This is not a joke. This isn't a parody. This isn't some onion thing.
Ste videli savete koje Savez za Srbiju daje kako država treba da se ponaša u ovim trenucima, krive vas i za koronavirus, ali to su isti oni ljudi o kojima ste možda malo prije vi govorili, koji su čutali pre nekoliko godina 2009. i 2010. Ste videli savete koje Savez za Srbiju daje kako država treba da se ponaša u...
Can't answer, because he can't stop coughing. And he's covering his mouth with a handkerchief, and wow, just wow. And I don't know if you noticed last night, but COVID Claudius wasn't in his best form. He has a hard enough time reading the teleprompter as it is. And it was especially bad last night. And then he gets caught on an open mic and a hot camera after he thinks that the feed is over, but he doesn't realize nobody's yelled clear. during the broadcast, he actually twiddled his thumbs. He twiddled his fucking thumbs. And then when it was over, well, whatever. Megan says, please tell the Horn community something that worked for me. There's an immune-boosting supplement I got at Walmart called Ester C. It's an expensive vitamin compound that I took when two of my roommates were sick earlier this year. I never even caught a sniffle. Yeah, Ester C's good stuff. Stephen, you were pointing out the most important sport postponed this season. They used the word pause. And, of course, that's hockey. The NHL has paused its season. Major League Soccer has done the same. All spring training games of Major League Baseball are postponed. The opening day of the season itself has been pushed back by 2 weeks. I don't suppose there's any chance that the president of Serbia has a White House meeting with Trump anytime soon, is there? Oh, and let's check in on the Johns Hopkins numbers. And see how we're doing. Total confirmed cases worldwide, 127,863. Total recovered, 68,310. Total deaths, 4,718. And as for confirmed cases, we're number eight. We're number eight. We're number eight. You know. Right. State of emergency, of course, in place, as Steve reminds us, in New York State and in New York City. Subways are running at about 30% of capacity, and the World Trade Center Oculus is nearly empty. Reflecting on all this, Scott in San Diego says, a national cascade of closings. I grew up in the 60s in a place where it usually snowed in the winter. If it snowed enough, the next morning you clicked on the radio and listened intently for the name of your school to be included in the closed list. When you heard it, for a kid, it was a good day indeed, unless your mom and dad told you to bundle up and get outside to shovel the snow off the steps, sidewalk, and driveway. But even then, after the chore was done, it was sledding, snowball fights, and the building of snowmen or snow forts for the rest of the day. This coronavirus cascade of closing seems to be a nightmare snow day school closing scenario. It doesn't seem to be limited by geographical area. Basketball, Broadway, baseball, spring training, opening days have been canceled, called off. Oh, and is it my imagine, or are retailers sending out a lot of emails lately to tell me about all the safety steps they're taking for shoppers? If only I'd venture out and visit their store. As I noted during a chat recently, uncharted territory is where we are. Nervous, too, and nobody knows how bad it'll get or how long it'll last. God almighty. Randy in PA says, if you really want to scare, plug a 6% yearly interest inflation rate into an online interest rate calculator. And we're coming really close to that overall 30% drop in the stock market, which will trigger many people's stop orders and have them selling at the bottom. Of course, the smart guys know that the real trick is to wait until it finds its bottom and then buy like a son of a gun. Because, well, there's money to be made. But something I wondered about, you know, the circuit breaker kicked on this morning. I wonder if the real, true free marketeers are supportive of that. Suspension of automatic trading, suspension of trading. Isn't that a safety net? Isn't that a means of keeping the free market from being truly free? somewhere out there. I bet you, I don't know, maybe it's at the Von Mises Institute or whatever. There's probably some libertarian going, nope, let it burn. Let it burn all the way to the ground. Because remember how all the Republicans wanted to let everything burn down when Bush's financial collapse finally fully manifested itself? And blamed it, of course, on that one in their White House. Yeah. I confess, I would like to be a fly on the wall wherever it is that Nitwit Nero is losing his shit right now. Because you know he is. I mean, after hyping himself for 3 years, look what I've done for the stock market. It's the best stock market in the history of the world's stock markets. There's no better stock market. It's beautiful. It's perfect. It's a perfect market. Believe me, it's incredible. What the fuck is happening? Shit. But to be, I guess, modestly fair with him, this is just the market doing what the market does when Republicans are president. Oh, it goes up, up, up like a beautiful, beautiful balloon. But because Republicans are the political equivalent of meth heads, it can't help but pop and fall back to earth. Because they have no willpower. They're driven by greed. And because of their essential natures, they can't get help. They can't learn. Oh, glory, Disney has finally decided to close the theme parks. Thank you. That only took way too goddamn long. Darlene says, I thought I saw a headline that Congress has canceled their upcoming recess. You did. You did see that. For let's recess every 2 seconds, Mitch, probably not hashtag worthy, but I don't do Twitter. Jesus, that's an eye-opener and indicative about how the seriousness of the coronavirus isn't lost even on him. He's probably privy to even more information than we, the hoi polloi, are. He knows that they're fucked if they take time off during this worldwide crisis. Well, here's the skinny on it. The House, being the only functional branch of the government, has actually done the business of legislating. And the House has come up with a package to try to mitigate some of the harm that is, as sure as God made little green apples, and if you eat too many, they'll give you a bellyache and the runs, gonna hit us. I mean, when we talk about shutting down the NHL, when we talk about shutting down Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer, the NBA, by the way, where Patient Zero in the NBA was caught on video last week before he was diagnosed, joking about COVID and going around and touching reporters and their microphones, well, a second member of the Utah Jazz is now tested positive for COVID-19. And they're kind of canaries in the coal mine, because these are the healthiest people, among the healthiest people in the country. You know, they work out constantly, constant strength training, physical training, endurance training. They do everything that they can to remain in tip-top form, because the NBA season is a long thing and a grueling one. And so it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. But no, as far as the Congress is concerned, and like the closures, these are, when we talk about NBA teams not playing, yeah, okay, that's two teams not playing or in any given game. But my God, the economic multiplier of the people who work in the industry, the people who sell the tickets, the people who work the box office, the people who work concessions and cleanup, the front office staff. Those are some truly big numbers. Now, Mark Cuban of the Dallas Mavericks has said he's going to do everything in his power to make sure that that people keep getting paid. But you can't say that for the entire American economy. And so, like I said, the House of Representatives is the only branch of government that's actually functioning. And so they have put together a package of legislation. And it includes economic relief, an extension of SNAP benefits, even though a member of the Trump regime announced yesterday that, by God, we're going to still throw about 700,000 Americans off SNAP come April 1. Fuck them! Fuck them useless eaters! If a man will not work, so also do not let him eat. Starve! Starve! Said Pastor John Hagee, the follower of Christ Jesus from down San Antonio, Texas way. Starve! So the House has put together a package that contains economic support, expanded support for unemployment benefits, expansion of SNAP. And Mitch McConnell, the most worthless, useless, vicious, pernicious, hateful, revolting, repulsive individual in government, and I say that being fully cognizant of the fact that Donald Trump is president of the United States. Well, Mitch McConnell said, we ain't going to take up that there coronavirus bill till we get back from our recess. The Senate will act when we come back and we have a clearer idea of what extra steps we need to take. That was spoken by Senator Lamar Alexander, who's not even going to pursue re-election, who could have behaved like a free man when he had a chance to help save this country, but instead manifested his slavish devotion to coronavirus Claudius. That's what Lamar Alexander said yesterday when he stepped in to stop an expedited consideration of the bill and blocked a unanimous consent request. And yet, how many maggots in Tennistan? Well, I sure am glad he done that. I mean, I wouldn't want to be getting none of that socialism. I wouldn't want paid sick leave or nothing like that, because that's communism. And what it was that Chinless Mitch was refusing to consider was free coronavirus testing, paid emergency leave, and food security assistance. Well, it began to get around that what Mitch McConnell was doing. And the senators were getting ready to bug the hell out and were not going to come back for 11 days. And over on the House side, Kevin McCarthy, and God, how I wish whoever it is that he represents would do something about him. He said he opposes this here coronavirus bill. Republicans are describing it as an ideological wish list for Democrats. No, really. It's repulsive.
Unfortunately, it appears at this hour that the Speaker and House Democrats instead chose to produce an ideological wish list that was not tailored closely to the circumstances. One is reminded of the famous comment.
Before the most pernicious thing ever to come out of Sheffield, Alabama, reminds us of what famously was said by some famous person, this. When he says it's an ideological wish list, what he's pissing and moaning about is the fact that the Democrats in the House were not agreeable to taking Medicare and Social Security out behind the barn and bludgeoning them to death with an old axe handle, because they rejected the payroll tax freeze. And of course, it was the intelligent thing to do, because it would have severely impaired Social Security and Medicare's ability to meet the needs of this looming healthcare, financial, and social disaster. And that's why they're pissed off, Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell both, because they finally saw it. God, it wasn't just within sight, it was almost within reach. 80 years of yearning by Republicans. 80 years of passing a desire from generation to generation. 80 years of father telling son, we haven't killed Medicare or we haven't killed Social Security yet. I wasn't able to, son, but someday maybe you will be. And that little Republican boy grows up and he has a Republican boy and a Republican girl, and he says, kids, we haven't been able to kill Social Security, that communist plot, in my lifetime. But someday, babies, someday, maybe you can. Never forget. We as Republicans will not be happy until we have destroyed every last thing that might even remotely be good for those people. The pures. And they grow up, and they tell their kids, and my God, 80 years later. Three years later for Medicare, the day has finally come. A massive crisis that they can use to finally kill it. Get rid of it. Take all that money and give it to their buddies, the captains of finance, the masters of the universe, the titans of industry. Because fuck those poor. Now, who famously said something, Mitch, you little prick?
From President Obama's first chief of staff, you never want a serious crisis to go to waste. Instead of focusing on immediate relief to affected individuals, families, and businesses, the House Democrats chose to wander into various areas of policy.
What he means by immediate relief is instead of killing Medicare and Social Security like Mitch fantasizes about when he takes his withered old member in his hand and asks Elaine if she'll maybe help out a little bit for a change. No, they didn't do that.
That are barely related, if at all, to the issue before us. So instead of working within existing law and within existing systems, to deliver targeted relief as efficiently and effectively as possible.
Again, targeted relief. In other words, every American who's paid into Social Security and Medicare has a target on their backs, and Mitch McConnell would very much like to pull the goddamn trigger. That's true. Dennis from Columbus. Trump, i.e. the clueless virus. I know. As to the Utah basketball player that was mocking the coronavirus, James in Illinois says, oh, don't tell me, let me guess, that Mike Licker is a maggot. Wouldn't surprise me in the least. Question coming from Stephen, New York. What do you think? I think VP Biden and Senator Sanders should hold a joint TV appearance where each of them takes about 15 to 20 minutes to explain what's going on with COVID-19 and what we should be doing. Thoughts? Some sort of unity. That would be a showing of unity in the face of danger would probably have some value. I don't necessarily know if they could manage to pull it off, though. Randy reminds us, most of the trading is automated, so the show of the New York Stock Exchange trading floor is mostly fake. As I understood it, shares used to trade in blocks of round 100 shares, and the price is the last price struck in a trade. Often there's a rule imposed that says there can only be a downtick if there's been a last traded uptick. If someone puts in a valid sell downtick that's too extreme on a given company's shares, that company representative's market maker supposedly steps in with the company's own cash to prop up the price, but the amount of company cash to be a company's market maker is limited. In a severe crash, it is basically useless. That may be where the government's $1 trillion went. Moreover, basically the Fed was buying stock. And it bought it, and the market kept plummeting, and I think that's where the $1 trillion went. But then again, I'm not an economist, and I damn sure don't play one on the radio. More than unity, Stephen New York says it would show the stark differences in competence. Does anybody really need that, Steve? I mean, I'm not being argumentative for the sake of argument, but is there, with the exception of the maggots, is there anybody? And you know, that's a Venn diagram that overlaps with Fox News viewers. Is there anybody that thinks that this is a competent response? Because I don't know how you can have an IQ above the temperature of ice water and think there's anything competent about this. Oh, and even NASCAR smartened up. Steve from Georgistan says, I'll be damned, NASCAR to race at Atlanta Homestead without fans. That's Atlanta Motor Speedway and the Homestead course in South Florida, the Miami Speedway. Oh, I'm sure they're hopping up and down. And a NASCAR race is fun. And I understand. You know, it's odd that I talked about how my generation has never been called upon to do much of anything in our time as Americans. Well, this is it. This is where we find out if my generation of either late boomer or early Xers can get our shit together and be part of an overall heroic type response. Not all heroes wear capes and tights. It could be that in the coming weeks, heroism may just be having the common decency to stay the fuck home and not run all over Kingdom Come, pretending that life is normal. That may be it. That may be us. Rudy Gobert, the guy with the Utah Jazz. He's a French national. And he also infected his teammate Donovan Mitchell because he went running around the locker room touching the players and touching their stuff. And, you know, those kind of people are just, you know, out there. And that's why, we keep Professor Spicoli on hand for the occasional consultation.
You dick!
Precisely. Oh, but speaking of Professor Spicoli and you dick, back to Mitch.
The speaker's proposal would stand up a needless thicket of new bureaucracy. They would task offices like the Social Security Administration with standing up brand new bureaucracy that would delay the delivery of aid to those who need it. As currently drafted, the proposal appears to impose permanent unfunded mandates on businesses that could cause massive job losses and put thousands of small businesses at risk. The administration was ready to collaborate. The Senate was ready to seriously consider a compromise product. But it appears that over in the House, left-wing political messaging may have taken priority over the needs of our country.
The fuck is left-wing political messaging? Anybody? Bueller? Left-wing political messaging is anything that doesn't put more money in Moscow Mitch's and Trump's and their filthy cronies' pockets. That's left. You know, saying that people ought not have their access to badly needed food taken away on April 1, that's left-wing political messaging. Saying that nobody should be financially destroyed for getting a coronavirus test run on them, that's left-wing political messaging. Wondering how the fuck some 27.5 million uninsured Americans are going to get care if they get this goddamn disease. That's left-wing political messaging. I mean, I know we hate Mitch McConnell. I know we despise him with the heat of a million white giant stars. But sometimes I wonder if we really and thoroughly understand how absolutely evil he is. Imagine wanting to financially devastate Medicare and Social Security for something that's nothing more than your aching desire for more power and authority. Jesus.
Certainly, this is disappointing. But the good news, Mr. President, is that our nation's economy remains strong. The president has continued.
Notice how he cleared his throat after our nation's economy remains strong. Out at the poker tables in Vegas, they call that a tell.
Continuing to take action himself, we just passed billions in urgent funding just last week.
Yeah, and just a couple of years ago, you passed a $1 trillion giveaway for your circle jerk pals. Yeah.
and the Senate will continue to stand ready and willing to work toward further bicameral bipartisan actions when the House Democrats decide to get serious.
Ah. This fucker would play politics if the chamber he heads was burning around him. If the Republicans were caught pouring gasoline all over the Senate chambers and throwing lit matches at it, he would blame Nancy Pelosi. The only competent person in the leadership of any branch of government. Now here's the stuff, just to give you an idea. This is the sort of thing that that Chinless Mitch considers to be leftist messaging, or messaging from the left. This is what doesn't constitute being serious about the crisis. $500 million for the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children. That's WIC. An extra $500 million for WIC to make sure that low-income mothers who lose their low-income jobs because of this disaster can keep feeding themselves and their babies. There's another $400 million in it to help local food banks keep up with what is going to obviously be increasing amounts of need. That's what constitutes not being serious to this vulgar, odious puddle of toxic filth that calls itself the majority leader of the Senate. And so the heat got turned up enough on Mitch that now that the senators can't bug out. Notwithstanding the scheduled state work period, the Senate will be in session next week. I'm glad talks are ongoing between the administration and Speaker Pelosi. I hope Congress can pass bipartisan legislation to continue combating the coronavirus and keep our economy strong. It'll probably wind up being like the impeachment. The Democratic majority in the House will pass much-needed legislation, and the Senate will then proceed to shit all over it. Please, God. Let them be a price for them to pay for being that unutterably vicious. Megan lets us know that state of Maryland schools have just all closed through the end of March. Thank you, Megan. It's a pity my state doesn't have the common sense to do the same. Jimmy. Refers to Mitch as Malum Mitch, Bad Mitch. It's just going to get it's going to get worse before it gets better. There's no other way to put it. They had the director of the CDC in front of them in the House today, and Katie Porter of California, who is becoming a real force with whom one does not fuck. She had CDC Director Redfield, and she brought the axe handle.
Dr. Cadillac, for someone without insurance, do you know the out-of-pocket cost of a complete blood count test?
No, ma'am, not immediately.
Do you have a ballpark?
Out of, with a copay, ma'am?
No, the out-of-pocket, just the typical cost.
I do not, ma'am.
Okay, the CBC typically costs about $36. What about the out-of-pocket cost for a complete metabolic panel?
Ma'am, I'd have to pass on that as well.
You have any idea? You want to take a ballpark?
I would say $75.
Okay, $58.
Getting closer.
How about flu A? The flu A test.
Ma'am, I would take a guess at about maybe $50.
$43. Flu, this is like the Price is Right. Flu B?
Too high again. I would probably say $44.
That's good. How about the cost of an ER visit for someone identified as high severity and threat?
I'm sorry, ma'am. What was the question again?
How about the cost of an ER visit for somebody identified as having high severity or high threat?
High severity. But ma'am, that's probably about $3,000 to $5,000.
Okay. That is $1,151. Right. This all totals up to $1,331. That's assuming they aren't kept in isolation. Isolation can add up for one family already, $4,000. And fear of these costs are going to keep people from being tested, from getting the care they need, and from keeping their communities safe. We live in a world where 40% of Americans cannot even afford a $400 unexpected expense.
Now, bear in mind what you're hearing Katie Porter explain. That's the left-wing messaging that that Chinless Mitch was pissing and moaning about. Just talking about the everyday realities of people who aren't as rich as he and Elaine Chao are.
We live in a world where 33% of Americans put off medical treatment last year. And we have a $1,331 expense, conservatively, just for testing for the coronavirus. Dr. Redfield, do you want to know who has the coronavirus and who doesn't?
Yes.
Not just rich people, but everybody who might have the virus?
All of America.
Dr. Redfield, are you familiar with 42 CFR 71.30? Excuse me. 42 CFR 71.30. The code of federal regulations that applies to the CDC. 42 CFR 71.30.
I think if you could frame what it talks about, that would help me.
Okay.
Relate.
Dr. Redfield, I'm pretty well known as a questioner on the Hill for not tipping my hand. I literally communicated to your office last night and received confirmation that I was going to be asking you about 42 CFR 71.30. This provides the director may authorize payment for the care and treatment of individuals subject to medical exam, quarantine, isolation, and conditional release.
That I know about, and my office did tell me that. I just didn't know the numbers, ma'am, as Congresswoman.
Great, so you're familiar. Dr. Redfield, will you commit to the CDC right now using that existing authority to pay for diagnostic testing free to every American regardless of insurance?
Well, I can say that we're going to do everything to make sure everybody can get the care they
enough.
Need.
Reclaiming my time. Dr. Redfield, you have the existing authority. Will you commit right now to using the authority that you have vested in you under law that provides in a public health emergency for testing, treatment, exam, isolation without cost, yes or no?
What I'm going to say is I'm going to review it in detail with CDC
I'm
and the department.
No, I'm reclaiming my time. Dr. Redfield, respectfully, I wrote you this letter along with my colleagues, Rosa DeLauro and Lauren Underwood, Congressman Underwood and Congressman DeLauro. We wrote you this letter 1 week ago. We quoted that existing authority to you, and we laid out this problem. We asked for a response yesterday. The deadline and the time for delay has passed. Will you commit to invoking your existing authority under 42 CFR 71.30 to provide for coronavirus testing for every American, regardless of insurance coverage?
What?
Now, see, that's a little unfair because he's already had to stand up there with that gang of snake handlers from the White House, snake handlers and strychnine swiggers and oil anointers and floor rollers, and he's had to talk about how star-spangled, fan-fucking-tastic Donald Trump is. Because it's the only way he can do his job. Even try to do his job. Because job one is whatever you've got to say, you've got to say it with Trump's tiny little diseased dick in your mouth. And if he commits to that, he's going to be the ex-director of the CDC as quick as word gets back to the White House.
What I was trying to say is that CDC is working with HHS now to see how we operationalize that.
Dr. Redfield, I hope that that answer weighs heavily on you, because it is going to weigh very heavily on me and on every American family. Well,
our intent is to make sure every American gets the care and treatment they need at this time of this major epidemic, and I'm...
Without cost, goddammit! Without cost! Otherwise, they don't get it. I get the idea that poor Dr. Redfield has never been to a place like rural Alabama or rural Mississippi or rural West Virginia or rural Kentucky or that little point of Virginia that sticks down between Kentucky and Tennessee and West Virginia. Because unless somebody tells people there, you can go to the doctor and it won't cost you a damn dime, they will not go. And the disease will spread as a result. Maybe that's part of the problem. We really lack a fundamental understanding of who we as a nation are, because we are not homogeneous. We are not all the same. We don't have the same attitudes. People in civilized states who have much more ready access to health care take much more proactive approaches to their own health. California, Oregon, Washington, New York, Massachusetts. But all of that comes to nothing, Mr. Finch. It don't come to nothing if the weakest links, the Alabamas and the Mississippis, the Arkansas and West Virginias, cannot make the same sort of treatment options available for their citizens. Because contrary to whatever the howling spirochetes swimming in that rancid mushroom gravy that passes for a brain between the ears of Donald Trump maybe barking, you can't just build a wall around something and make it go away. Jesus. Jack in Shreveport, subject line Republican senators. Those fuckers pressured Mitch because they don't want to go back to their constituents with things as bad as Mitch would like to leave them. Well, it's a little of this and a little of that, Jack. Because they're going to be hard-pressed to go home to the maggots and tell them that it's not really real. Now, bear in mind that I think it was Paul Gosar. I'm not sure who. But somebody, I think it was Gosar who retweeted it. Some maggot asshole who said that, Ted Cruz and Paul Gosar have requested a meeting with Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Bearing in mind that Gosar and Cruz were both under self-quarantine, having been exposed to the coronavirus. So a few days ago, old Balls and Strikes Roberts, who perjured his own ass off in his confirmation hearing before the Senate, remember that, please. He issued a stern rebuke of Senator Chuck Schumer, who did nothing more than quote another Republican in saying that if Ann's boy Neil and Brett Kavanaugh take action against the right of women to maintain to be in charge of the workings of their own body, that they would sow the wind and reap the whirlwind. Oh, that got old Balls and Strikes all upset. How dare he threaten a member? Meanwhile, Republicans are retweeting a suggestion that Republicans use this disease to try to assassinate Ruth Bader Ginsburg with it. And over there in the Supreme Court offices of old Balls and Strikes John Roberts, crickets, bupkis, nothing. That's James in Illinois, going back to Elaine and Elaine giving a hand to Chinless Mitch. Elaine, help! She's Mitch's beard. My theory is that Mitch and confirmed bachelor Lindsey Graham are tickling each other's fancy. Yeah, I got it. You get a cowbell for that. You most definitely do. So we are an hour and a quarter into the program, the filibobster rolling along merrily. We started the program with $495 to raise. We still have $495 to raise. And it'll be $695 if we don't take at least a little bit of a bite out of it this evening. It would be magnificent if we could. So, heck, if we could finish up Tuesday, that'd be nice. That's $95. And Wednesday and today are $4. Can we maybe make the effort? If you haven't in a while, maybe. Be lovely. Someone has been hanging on the stress line for a very long time. Let's see who it is. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Darlene from Connecticut.
Oh, hey, Darlene. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Sometimes I just have to get it all out of my system before I can...
Well, I hated to interrupt your filibuster, but I wanted to say that I think that Katie Porter was the perfect person to... I'm hearing an echo. I'm sorry.
That's weird.
Yeah, I'm hearing an echo over the phone, so I'll just keep pushing forward.
Yeah, it's not going out over the air, if that means anything. I know it's...
Okay, good.
It's
okay.
Annoying, but it's not going out.
That's cool. Okay, so who was it that she was grilling?
That was Dr. Redfield, the director of the CDC.
Of course, okay. She's perfect for that because of her... I'm sure you heard about this or saw it, about her burst appendix last year.
Yes.
She had, which is unbelievable that she survived that, but she had, I guess she had to do a little bit of shopping for her surgery, and that when she went for the surgery, I guess it cost like $55,000 worth of care. She had a $250 copayment, but then she got a surprise medical bill for over $3,000, like $3,200 and some change, because the surgeon who happened to perform the procedure on her was out of network. So she wasn't expecting this. And, of course, when you're going under the knife, the last thing you're thinking about is whether the surgeon is out of network or in network, because I think that
Well, if you've got a burst appendix, how are you doing anything but screaming?
I don't know how she survived that. I don't know, because it sounded like from what I saw on TV, and then I'm reading an article, although it doesn't indicate this, but it sounded like she was walking around for a while with this burst appendix, at least a day or so. I don't know if that's feasible, but that's what
actually it is. What happens is when an appendix bursts, you'll be pain, and you know it's bad, and then and you know you run a fever. Then the appendix bursts, and for a period of time, you actually feel better because it's burst.
Because it's burst.
But then the sepsis begins going systemic, and trouble sets back in. Your fever goes through the roof, and you're screwed. And so you're absolutely right. I don't know how she doctor shopped.
Well, as a single mother, she's a single mom.
Right.
She asked her campaign manager to take her to the hospital. I guess it's Hoag, H-O-A-G Hospital. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But that was in network per her assurance. But when she underwent the appendectomy, the actual surgeon was not. So that, I mean, that's like totally screwy. So she's like, she's a Congress critter. And she gets this $3,231 bill. So she owed $2,800 out of pocket for the surgery, according to what this article says that I'm reading here in advisory board. So she's perfect for grilling this guy because she's experienced, you know, the medical system firsthand. And I'm sure she can afford to pay. I'm sure she can afford to pay that extra out of network. But why would you expect that the surgeon would be out of network? And why would you even have the wherewithal at that point in time to be even questioning that?
Why are surgeons working? Why are out of network surgeons working in network hospitals?
Damn fucking good question.
That's the kind of thing that only a for-profit healthcare system. That's the kind of problem that only a for-profit healthcare system can create. Networks.
Well, it almost sounds like opportunism run amok.
It's capitalism run amok.
Capitalism run amok, exactly. And talking about McConnell, and the coronavirus, and to me, it sounds like Naomi Klein's disaster capitalism all over again.
It really does.
Yeah, it's disaster capitalism. You know, and so you bring it to the local level. You know, I'm because I'm a writer, I tend to get all the writing kind of jobs, most of them that are not paid for. But in my little rural community in Connecticut, we have this small business circle. And the big debate is whether or not we should have our this pancake breakfast coming up on Sunday. Now, I can't attend.
May I suggest no?
Exactly. And the decision was just made to not hold it. Although, you know, there are times where I question myself. It's like, why did I settle in this little rural Republican-dominated town, farming community? There's definitely some charm to it, and the people are good people, and people know that I have a disability, and they're there to help me, and whether Republican or Democrat. But this whole, you get that feedback. All people are making too big a deal out of this. So I sent everyone in this. I'm the secretary of this business circle because of the writing piece. And
I know how that worked. I know how that happened. You mentioned your disability. They said everybody, it went like this, didn't it? Whoever wants to be secretary, take one step forward, and everybody took one step back, and you couldn't get back fast enough?
Kind of. Well, I actually, a dear friend of mine reached out to me who is one of the, I think she's the VP. She's very, very progressive, thank goodness. And she said, you know, you're a writer, you would be perfect for this. And probably because nobody wanted to do it. But I'm okay with it. There's a great article from Vox. I don't know if you saw it, but it said how canceled events and self-quarantines save lives in one chart. And it was posted a couple of days ago, March 10th. And I think it jibes very well with what you were saying about not getting, staying away from large crowds. The only way to stem the spread of this is to not engage in these, primarily large gatherings, but also small gatherings, because you just never know. And I hadn't weighed in until this evening, until I saw this article, and then I had a personal kind of close call, because I can't attend anyway, because my whole situation with transporting my wheelchair is still in process. So, but I felt like I needed to share this article with many of these individuals who are probably more conservative, because I live in this rural Republican dominated town, and the attitude is, oh, people are overreacting, or I haven't seen it affect my business, my personal business, which, like, one of the guys is owns a liquor store. Which, quite frankly, probably people are hitting the bottle more over there.
I was
so
going to say
that
person is probably not going to see a negative impact. That person may see an uptick.
Exactly, and he said that. He said, "Hey, if you need any liquor for the apocalypse, call me." Which was a great, little twist of humor on this.
And see, here's a thing to think about, because we're all worried about hand sanitizer now. And I know you've probably seen the recipes I have where you mix it like pure grain alcohol or 90% isopropyl rubbing alcohol, two-thirds, one-third with aloe vera gel. No, fuck that. What you do is you get your Clear Spring pure grain alcohol, 200 proof, 100% alcohol, and you make Jell-O shooters with I like the green lime Jell-O. And you get the little plastic specimen cups or the little paper ones, And you make space in your fridge, you put them on a tray, and you make a bunch of them. And you use the grain alcohol and the Jell-O, and you've got Jell-O shooters, and they are the same, roughly the same. You can mix them to roughly the same alcohol content, but then, and you use the sugar-free Jell-O, so it's not going to be sticky. Then you just reach into the fridge and grab one of the little cups, and you've got hand sanitizer. But if you decide that you're getting a little stir crazy, a little bit of cabin fever kicking in, you just pop a couple of them. And the next thing you know, you're just wandering around behind the little animals. Which might not be a good idea, because I think that's how we got coronavirus in the first place.
So I guess that, and this is probably a very poor joke, but I guess it kills two birds at one stone, with one stone.
Or one
stone.
Or one stoned, you know.
Or with one stoned. So this is like a very small, little pancake breakfast in this insignificant little community, rural Republican township, Republican-dominated township in this, left-hand corner of this itsy-bitsy state of this country, and of this massive country. And we've decided to postpone. And I had sent an email out, and I said, look, I haven't weighed in because I wasn't planning on attending, but today, you know, look, I sent them the Vox article. So, and Vox strikes me as being somewhat more progressive along the spectrum, probably not as much as Vice or Raw Story, but it's probably a little bit more left of center than the other two. Excuse me, than something like, I don't know, Newsweek or something. And I don't know how well that'll go over with some of the more conservative individuals, but one of the things that I experienced was a basic thing. I just took my two little pups, who I cherish tremendously, I took them for grooming today, not thinking anything of it. And my mother had warned me. My mother is in a convalescent home that is presently in lockdown in the next town over. She's really flipping out. They won't even let my father drop off food for her, like little snacks and things. They won't accept it. Even though she's not going to starve, but she's feeling very cooped up and frustrated and angry. So I'm going to call the home tomorrow and ask them what their protocol is for screening their CNAs. But she warned me, she said, you shouldn't take your dogs for the grooming. And I said, yeah, it's no big deal. So I do this every month. I took them, dropped them off, didn't think twice. And, you know, Alfie is in serious need of a grooming every 3 weeks, let alone four. It's just how his fur is, his hair is. So when I go to pick them up, the groomer informs me that her husband works in the Fairfield public school system of Connecticut. Of course, we're talking Fairfield County, which is a very wealthy county, if not one of the most wealthy counties in the country. And that one of the teachers in the school where he works came in contact with the first confirmed coronavirus case in Connecticut. It was an employee of Danbury Hospital. So they shut the entire Fairfield public school system down. And they don't even have, they're not even indicating a reopening date. This is indefinite. So although she reassured me that her husband did not come in direct contact with the teacher in question, she's feeling like a little nervous. She's clearly shaken by it. And I believe her, you know, and I'm trusting that he didn't come into contact with somebody that came into contact with a teacher, you know. But I came in contact with her. She's grooming my dog. And I'm over an hour and a half away from the Fairfield, from the town of Fairfield. So it's like, I'm just going to drop my dogs off for grooming. And I think I'm fine. I feel fine. But of course it takes a while to determine, but you just don't know. Don't know when you're coming, who you might be coming into contact with. So one of the other members of this little business circle in my little town in the middle of nowhere in Connecticut said that he spoke with the first selectman of our town, and that the Council of Governments was speaking with the local area health district officials, and that they're advising leaders in our area, like selectmen and town managers, to discourage any kind of public meetings of any kind unless it's integral to the operation of the entity, like whether it's, you know, like say a government board meeting or a civic or religious organizations. So based on this, we're all voting, I you know, to not have this pancake breakfast because it's not essential.
Sure.
But I have a, which makes sense, because my argument based on the Vox article, which was really good, is that, you know, and you, what echoes what you had said, that, you know, trying to keep away from small and large gatherings prevents the rapid spread of the coronavirus. It sounds like it's going to spread regardless, but how quickly and how overwhelmed our less than, you know, our subpar medical system gets.
Right.
The better, you know. So my guess is that if this, because this is so fluid, then I think eventually government, civic, and religious organizations are going to have to consider suspending activities until further notice, too.
Well, I think on Sunday, I'd already planned on this. Now, we're not talking about me getting out of the car or anything. But I think Sunday morning, I'm just going to toddle around my little community where we might not have a bar anymore and we might not have an auto dealership and we all we got left is a Walgreens and a Dollar General, but by God, we got lots of churches. Come Sunday, I'm going to go toddling around here and just see how many parking lots are full. And then I'm going to know, and then I will have an idea of how bad it's going to be. And in a place like Alabama, a place like West Virginia, Mississippi, anywhere in the Bible Belt, the churches will be, because, you know, Darlene, I don't have any NBA games to go to. I'm way too far away from Morgantown to go to a Mountaineer basketball game. Not going to go down for the Boys and Girls High School Tournament. And that thing brings thousands, by the way. So we don't, you know, the biggest group gathering that I'm likely to participate in is on like a Friday or Saturday night to go over to the Grove, you know, the music venue over top of Secret Sandwich Society, and listen to some music. Mm-hmm. I ain't doing that.
Yeah.
But when I see parking lots full of cars at all these houses of gospel sharping, then I will know that, yes, it's going to blaze through my little community, too. Because none of these churches will suspend. I guarantee you. You know, maybe the United Methodists, possibly the Episcopals, but all the various and sundry flavors of Baptist, no way. They're going to be there.
See, that's...
Yeah, and of course, government can't do anything.
Sorry.
That's all right. Government can't do anything about it because it would be in... Because, you know, the First Amendment is little more than a life support system for the religion industry in 2020. And so the government can't say, shut the churches down. How dare you offend precious little baby Jesus?
Right, and Jesus and God will save the ball.
Right.
They won't get the coronavirus, which is just bullshit, as we know.
But I
just got an email.
Go ahead.
From my sister, the New Milford school system, public school, just closed their schools, just sent out a notice. They've closed their schools indefinitely, and there's no known cases yet in New Milford, but New Milford borders Danbury, where the first case was. So it looks like all the public school systems are one by one starting to close down. That's significant, and I think that's a good thing. This is going to. I can't even think about how this is going to disrupt the system. And oh my God, this is
it's huge. like what I've been preaching for so long. Preaching, I hate to use that term, but for so long I've talked about how fragile our culture is, how fragile our social apparatus is.
Yes.
And we're gonna find out.
Yeah.
For instance, I just got a note from Jude in the Great Northwest. She said, my dear sister and closest confidant friend's funeral has been postponed tomorrow at her parish due to the virus. And I read a story out of Italy about a man who had to keep the corpse of his dead sister in his house because none of the funeral homes would come and pick her up when she died.
Jesus. Oh, my God.
I know it. There are probably those who listen to this program who think that I'm overblowing this, but and you know there's a Monty Python reference for everything, but you know I saw the story. Agnes showed it to me, the Italian story, and I immediately thought back to, you know, bring out your dead, whack,
meow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here's one, ninepence. See you Thursday. I'm not dead.
Not dead yet.
Ah, you're very ill. You will be very soon. Don't be such a baby. I don't want to go on the cart. But those things can and will happen. Italy has shut down everything but pharmacies and grocery stores.
And because of my disability, I've resorted in the last 2 or 3 months to Instacart. Shopping, paying somebody to shop for me.
Yeah.
Which is hugely invaluable. Even though it's more expensive, it literally saves me. I'm not kidding. Because of the difficulties with ambulating and having to drag groceries up 3 steps.
Oh.
5 hours out of my day. I'm not kidding. 5 hours. Assuming I don't wipe out, assuming that I don't get hurt, all of this stuff. Well, I had to order. I was down to the wire. I had to order groceries yesterday. And, you know, it does kind of back up. It's in the back of my mind, like, I'm taking, it's like a spin of the roulette wheel. I don't know who's coming, you know, they supposedly do background checks on the individuals and everything else. I'm sure they're not doing background checks on whether or not the person has a
well, of course
virus
not,
or the coronavirus.
Rate-wise, we've only tested 5 people per million in this country.
Right. I mean, in Connecticut right now, there are 6 confirmed cases. We're lucky. But that's just confirmed, known. We, you know, there could be more. Like today, I just took my freaking dogs to get groomed in my town, 2.5 miles down the road. And if I really start to think about it, it's like, well, the groomer's husband is a driver, I think, for the school. What does that mean? Does that mean that he drove children? What does that mean? Does it mean the children? Did any of those children have that teacher as their teacher? It's just the possibilities of infection are endless, even if a person doesn't show signs, right? So, it's disturbing. I actually have to go to the clinic next week to be fitted for an orthotic, a new orthotic. Well, this orthotic I was fitted for last week, but the consultant screwed up. He screwed up on the orthotic, and so he had to take it back, and I need to be refitted. Well, he's going to be in Toronto this week. And I know for a fact that there are coronavirus cases in Toronto.
Yes.
Canada. So now I'm like, do I meet with this individual? You know, I'm kind of like, do I go to this? When I was there last week.
Because you have to be physically present to be fitted.
Correct. And although I'm going to shoot my clinical doctor, who I absolutely adore, and I'll do anything he says. I always joke, he's the only man on the planet that I'll listen to. But I'm going to shoot him an email and say, does my muscular dystrophy compromise me in any way? You know, because it's muscular. In rare cases, it'll affect the heart and maybe the lungs. I'm not there. I'm not there with that. But I do have colitis, which is an intestinal, and well, it's like a, you know, it's with the colon, and it's, it involves, it's an autoimmune problem with the colon. And although I'm in remission, I don't know if that puts me at risk. And when I was there last week, I was talking to what sounded like a very sick receptionist, talking to somebody on the phone saying, well, you've been out of the country, so we need to talk to our nurse. So I'm just going to be, for a physical therapy session, I'm just going to be fitted for an orthotic. You know, and it seems innocuous, but it's like, you don't know who's come in contact with who's come in contact. Like, I never in a million years would have thought that my dog's groomer.
Yeah.
And she was freaked out. She was shaken by this. She's like, I don't know, for some reason, Kevin Bacon keeps coming up in the discussion lately. She said, you know, it's like 7 degrees of separation. Kevin Bacon, who's actually one of my neighbors here, he lives in Sharon, Connecticut.
Oh, my God.
And it's like hilarious, and I'm thinking, it is, but she's right. It's like that whole thing of 6 degrees, 7 degrees of separation. You just don't know who you're coming into contact with, and nobody's intending to infect anyone, but you don't know who's been in touch with, who's been in contact
right.
with who.
Right,
it's
so difficult to, for starters, these little seemingly innocuous behaviors we have, these little primate behaviors, you know, maybe it started out back when we're still, you know, picking the fleas off of each other and eating them, you know, 2-3 million years ago. But we touch, and we touch each other, and we touch ourselves. And so today, while I was in Wally World, this little old man, I mean, looked like probably, you know, 80 or so, he and his wife, bless their hearts, are toddling through the Wally World, and he's standing there looking at something. And he takes his curled up fist and coughs into it and then reaches and picks up a product off the shelf. At which point I kind of, oh no. Well, Darlene, yeah, I've lost the Bluetooth on you. Let me see if I can get it back. I hear you on the speaker, but I can't hear you on the, you're not coming through.
What's really weird is you disappeared for a second and then came back, but I'm not hearing the echo, my voice echoing anymore.
No, that's because you're not going through the, now you're back. Now you're back.
Okay, am I back?
Yeah.
Hello, hello?
Yeah.
Okay, I can hear the echo again, so I know I'm back.
Yeah,
okay.
Because you just went, I just got you back through the gizmo and into the board.
Okay. I mean, I heard everything you said, but I didn't know if you could hear me.
And so I was just, you know, feats don't fail me now. And I tried to put some distance.
Yeah.
And, you know, the poor old guy probably doesn't have it. It's just probably his smoker's hack or whatever. But it's that behavioral aspect of we got to learn how to not do these things. And we got to teach each other, not cruelly, not meanly. We got to teach each other how not to do these things.
And I hate to say this because I love people of advanced years and wisdom, but a lot of times they don't give a shit. They're like, hey, I'm going to die soon anyway. What do I care? And that's not everyone, but I've heard it come from people that are near and dear to my heart. It's like, well, I don't care if I eat this stuff that is bad for me. I'm 80-something. It doesn't matter at this point. It hasn't killed me yet. They can't take that attitude with this. They can't. And
no.
So I agree. I think we need to...
And by the way, Shorty is suggesting, Darlene, that you call his office and see if he really went to Toronto.
That's a good idea, Shorty. That's a very good idea. Yeah, I think I will do that.
And meanwhile, even the,
because then
you know, last night we had the latest monumental fuck up from Nitwit Nero, and they had to issue like four corrections, and guess who wrote the speech? By the way, it was a beautiful speech, a perfect speech. It was written
Stephen
by
Miller,
Jared, and Stephen.
Okay, I was close. I got half of it right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so now, when I've got a note here that came from. Let's see here. Let me. Agnes sent this along to me. Reported by Mike McIntyre, who's at the New York Times. He tweeted, just arrived at JFK from Paris. Zero screening, testing, or even questions related to coronavirus, and the global entry scanner spit out someone else's entry receipt for me, and the guy behind me got mine, and so on. My wife went through regular customs and was asked if she'd been to China, but that was it. No one asked me a single question, and any other screening was non-existent.
Oh, jeez.
The incompetence is, you know, breathtaking, but not surprising. So now we have an article from The Hill, citing a statement made, and this was a press conference in Ohio. It was Governor Mike DeWine was standing there, as was the Ohio Department of Health Director Amy Acton, and she said the following. Now this is Ohio. Let's take a quick peep at the Johns Hopkins map. Drill in. Now, Ohio is just a tiny little red dot, right? Ohio says five confirmed cases, no deaths, no recoveries, five active, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the numbers that Ohio Department of Health Director Amy Acton was dealing with when she said, we know now just the fact of community spread says that at least 1%, at the very least 1% of our population is carrying this virus in Ohio today. The dateline on this is today. We have 11.7 million people. So the math is over 100,000. So that just gives you a sense of how this virus spreads and is spreading quickly.
It's spreading quickly, yeah. I mean, the Vox article was... It's not comforting at all, but I think they said, and it's similar to what you had said about, or one of the Horn listeners had said about 70% of Americans will contract this. I think the Vox article was saying between 20 and 60%. And it's like, oh, geez, you know, that's a big range.
So,
if you were to say 20%, that's probably a lot.
And so, probably the disease carrier in chief, he said, "Just be calm, it'll go away," and refuses to be tested, probably because he thinks that by being tested, somebody can sneakily give it to him,
or that just by ignoring it, it won't happen, or that. You mean look at how he's been enabled throughout his presidency? Well, throughout his life, you know, he's never been called to task on anything. I would imagine you would start to feel pretty fucking invincible by then.
So now there are three states that have no reported cases: Idaho, Alabama, and West Virginia. And all three are probably crawling with it.
Yeah. Yep.
But if you don't look for it, you won't find it. And we don't want to find it.
Well, far be it from me to suggest. I mean, I would love to attend the Horn Inn in June. I don't know.
Oh, I think we can. I think that ship has sailed. Until we know what's going on here. I don't feel confident. I mean, I think we're still going to do it. I selected that day, like I said, because anecdotally, it hasn't rained on that day on the first Saturday in June in like 100 years here.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to have one. I don't think it's going to be on that date, because at this point in time, people couldn't even get good airfares. And we don't know how much we'll have in the way of airlines by June. So I think we have to watch. I think we have to watch and wait. I think it'll be a lot of fun when we do it. But since everything gets here later, and since because I was talking with Agnes about this earlier today, if you think about the makeup of West Virginia, there are four or five places you would expect to see this virus first. Morgantown, because it's close to Pittsburgh. Charlestown, Berkeley Springs, over in the Eastern Panhandle, because it's so close to D.C. Huntington, because it's right across the Big Sandy River from Ohio, or from Kentucky. Parkersburg, because it's right across the river from Ohio. Charleston, because it's the state capital, and it's also the home of most of the mining and fracking business, so you got international business coming in and out on a fairly routine basis. But then one other place. My county.
Oh, geez.
Because this is the beating heart of the whitewater rafting industry, the rock climbing industry, the kayaking industry, the biking and hiking and ecotourism industry. And probably as many or more people come from out of state to this little county than any other in the state. You know, granted, it's just 2 or 3 days or a weekend or whatever. But it just so happens that we are right now at the very front end of the opening of the season.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. You know, because where I live in Connecticut is well known for its fly fishing and its canoeing and, you know, it's more of the touristy kind of draw. I totally see that.
It's funny how you talk about how rural it is there. That just exposed my geographical ignorance and geographical, I guess, bigotry, because I just assume that the sprawl starts in Philadelphia, and people are just crammed one on top of each other all the way to just north of Manchester, New Hampshire. But
there
is countryside out there.
I can completely understand. In the northwest corner and in the eastern part of Connecticut, which probably Charlene can attest to, being in Rhode Island, the joke is on the northwest part of Connecticut, we joke about the eastern part of Connecticut is not even existing. It's like, what? We sit there, we hear about the town names, and we're like, where is that? You know? So that's a big joke. But we are a tiny state, extremely wealthy state, but a densely populated state. So probably the fact that there's only 6 known cases at this point is probably a blessing, because we've got over 3 million people crammed into a very small, square acreage or whatever they call it. But it's where I live is rural and is considered, and I've had people say this, people who have been well traveled in their lives. Matter of fact, I got in touch with a dear friend of mine who is a German expat. I was kind of worried about him, and I kind of live vicariously through him and his wife, because they are true world travelers. They're living in Dubai right now, and he said that hands down, traveling the world, he said that the northwest corner of Connecticut is one of the most beautiful places he's ever been to. And it is very rural, but a lot of people say what you say, people that live in the surrounding states, that have visited Connecticut think that Connecticut is basically all like Bridgeport, New Haven, Fairfield, you know, County, all of the southern part of the state, that is very built up and very industrialized. And when they come up further north, if you're heading towards Massachusetts, they're shocked, they're stunned at how country and rural it can be in the northern part, in the northwestern part, and in the eastern part of the state.
Well, I used to be big into cigars, so I actually learned something somewhere along the way about the Connecticut shade wrapper and the fact that somewhere along the Connecticut River there are massive tobacco farms still. And the only thing they do,
yes,
the only thing they do is grow tobacco leaves that are then cured and used as the beautiful golden exterior wrapper for cigars. And for people who don't know, and most people don't care, the wrapper is where all the flavor is in a cigar. The binder and the interior are just there to keep things burning. All the flavor, all the quality, all the stuff that you judge in terms of profile is in the wrapper.
Correct. Yes, that is in the north central part of the state, where I lived for a number of years after I graduated from law school, like in the East Windsor Broadbrook area. That can be very ruralized, very flat, like a very flat part of the state where you can take a walk and you'll see these massive tobacco barns. They're these long, huge barns out in the middle of a field.
Yeah, they're curing operations.
Correct. They're curing operations, and actually, an ex-boyfriend of mine bought a house here in my town, about 8 minutes away, where the previous owner had actually repurposed the wood from one of the demolished tobacco farm barns as the siding for his house and also for his garage. So, yeah, his detached garage, yeah.
And the reason is Connecticut.
We do have that still.
Yeah, and the reason it's Connecticut shade is because they literally grow the tobacco under cloth, under cloth covers, to keep it from to keep the photosynthesis from turning it all the way dark.
Right, and mind you, that's under like a barn, a huge long barn with this dark wood and dark And they're still there. Those barns are still there.
And they use the same process in Germany to produce the Weisse Spargel, the white asparagus. And so you'll see these big flat fields of asparagus, and they're covered with white tarps to keep the sun from converting the asparagus as a chlorophyll. And the Germans go about this time of year, they start going absolutely hog wild for white asparagus. Which is quite
and
delicious.
I like white asparagus. It is very good. Yes, yeah, we do get them in some of the grocery stores here,
and just to have a little food porn for a minute, you can steam that white asparagus, and then chill it, and slice strawberries, and toss the strawberries and the white asparagus in a sweet lemon vinaigrette, with like some poppy seeds. And it is a beautiful warm spring day salad.
Oh yeah, definitely. That sounds lovely. I am going to have to try that. Yeah, I can see that being a warm weather type of.
So when you find out that the white asparagus is along, check the strawberries, and then just look up any good sweet lemon vinaigrette dressing. You know, maybe you know what would make the night lemon juice. And the white balsamic vinegar.
Oh.
Yeah. I bought some of that, and I've been known to just kind of pour a little swig and because it's not it's not like apple cider vinegar. It's wonderful. And of course, I worried the other day because one of the Italian regions that is hardest hit by the disease is Modena. And Modena is the home of balsamic vinegar, the good stuff.
Oh, geez. Oh, geez. Yeah, where there's no caramel put into it or preservatives.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
they're not cheating.
The pure stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want the other crap.
Exactly. One of the things, you know, I hope when we do the horn in that people have a chance to, like, check out the cool little eateries and stuff in Fayetteville. There's a pizza joint mm-hmm. called Pies and Pints, and they've spread all over the country. Not all over the country, but there's a number of them. But the original is in Fayetteville, and they came up with a balsamic reduction. And they do a beautiful, beautiful pizza that is, it's a white pizza. And it's got ricotta cheese, goat cheese, sliced sweet seedless grapes, and balsamic reduction drizzled all over it. And it's fan-freaking-tastic.
The goat cheese and the grapes
alone
are delicious. So, I mean, if you're adding all this other, oh, my God, I can't believe what that must be like. And I'm hoping I will get my wheelchair accessible van.
Still shopping though, right?
No, I made a decision. I went through a 4.5 hour long driver's assessment, which was grueling, and I was not expecting that because I had been told that, oh, don't worry, you're a shoo-in, you're fine. They don't put you through your paces. Well, that's bullshit. In Connecticut, we have Easter Seals in Meriden, and they got a new occupational therapist there who really, she was professional, very nice, and did not let me off the hook on anything. And I told her that I adore her, and I think I would give her a recommendation to anywhere because she was an excellent occupational therapist. But she put me through my paces, visual acuity, cognitive, including short-term and long-term memory, and flexibility and strength, all related to driving. 4.5 hours, and the travel to and from was 2 hours. So you're talking about a 6 to 6.5 hour long day. I was exhausted and did not eat before going, which was a big mistake. But I passed pretty much with flying colors. The part of the 4.5 hour driving assessment included driving around in a abandoned parking lot in the city in a handicap accessible van, trying different modalities, like different ways of driving, using a left foot accelerator and brake and using hand controls. And then also, you know, using the regular right foot accelerator and brake. And because I wear an AFO on my foot, which is now being changed to something more serious, which I mentioned that earlier in the conversation that the consultant screwed up on it, so I need to get a new thing, a new AFO. What I discovered was that mind you, I've been driving with my right, you know, using the brake and the accelerator pedal with my right foot since I was 16, and I'm going to be 55 this year. So basically, switching to the left foot, I was good with the acceleration, but be sure you have your seatbelt on because I'm too good with the brake. Like I don't have that touchdown with the brake. So you're going to go through the windshield. I like my reflex.
Yeah, just a little too vigorous with the braking yet.
Thank you. Yes, exactly. But what I discovered was I really liked using hand controls. So that's what she's approved. And then she kindly and brilliantly said, I want to meet you at one of the car dealerships that do the conversions, and I want to see you in the vehicles. So I test sat in three different vans, which, mind you, I would never purchase in a million years but for this disease. So I test sat in the Chrysler Pacifica, which I know you warned me off of, the Toyota Sienna, and the Honda Odyssey. Guess which one fit me the best?
The Chrysler.
No.
No?
The Honda. No, you're the first person that didn't guess it. The Honda Odyssey.
I could see that.
So that, yeah, because I felt like I was, because, you know what, this wasn't fair to you, because I didn't give you a key piece of information. The occupational therapist wants me to drive the vehicle from my wheelchair. From my wheelchair. So the wheelchair rules. So in the Chrysler Pacifica, I felt like Goldilocks. The Chrysler Pacifica was, I felt like I was eating the steering wheel. My line of sight was really bad. The Toyota Sienna, which everybody always recommends, my line of sight was better, but the dashboard is a clusterfuck. It's an absolute clusterfuck. And I said, well, I was exhausted by then, and I'm like, well, let's try the Honda Odyssey. And I get into it, and it's like, wow. Everything is perfectly situated. It's more mechanized, like you can push one button, push a bunch of buttons, you can go into park, drive, whereas they would have to modify, the state would have to modify the Sienna because it still has the, you know, the normal, like the regular, for putting into drive and reverse, you have to pull the, you know, the gear shifting.
Yeah.
Whereas the Odyssey, you just push a button. And the Toyota Sienna, they haven't improved on the design in years. The look of it, the exterior and the interior. So I couldn't find the fucking push button to start the thing up.
Laughing with, not laughing
at. Where
the
fuck is it? Where is it? It was behind the steering wheel. I couldn't find it. Whereas the Odyssey, the push button is right there. Big blazing lights, right to the left, excuse me, right to the right, and it has a much bigger screen. It has, for charging your phone, it's all Bluetooth-like charging. It's not like, I couldn't find a hookup in the Sienna. I had to, it's way down below where you have to plug it in. It's a wire hookup, whereas in the Odyssey, you can recharge your phone.
Oh, it's got a wireless charging pad?
Yes, that's it. Wireless. Thank you. I couldn't think of it. A wireless charging pad, which is critical. I think for somebody like myself, I need to be able to have cell phone in case there's an emergency, say the ramp doesn't deploy or something like that. So even though it's going to cost me a shit ton more money to buy the car outright as opposed to the state modifying it, whereas with the Sienna, it would cost me less to buy it outright, but the state would have to pay more to modify it. I would love the state to pay more than for me to lose a lot more money, but the Odyssey fit me better. It just fit me better, so I think I'll be happier with it.
All told, it's probably, of the three, it's probably the best vehicle overall.
I think so. I mean, mechanically, in terms of reliability, the Toyota really is at the top, but the Odyssey is a close second. And basically what determines my purchase is so different from what everybody else is. It's it's based on the wheelchair. The wheelchair rules.
It controls everything, sure.
Exactly.
And, you know, ergonomics are real. And
yes.
One of the things that bugs me more than anything else is the degree to which you can tell how much design import is given to a particular vehicle in terms of the layout inside the cabin.
Thank you for saying that, because I think that's true. I think that, you know, the Odyssey is a bit smaller, even though on paper it turns out to be longer and wider. On paper, the way the setup is, it's a bit tighter, but I just couldn't. I felt like I was in command of the vehicle. Like I felt like I would, and that's really important, that I feel like I'm in command of the vehicle. Whereas, you know, in the Sienna, it was a little bit better, but like I said, the dashboard was a clusterfuck. It was a clusterfuck, and they would have had to do so many additional modifications to it that also increases the chances that more can go wrong. So I'm happy with my decision. So that's going to go out to bid. Hopefully the bidders will come in. There's three bidders in the state. So hopefully it'll be less than 60 days. And then depending on what I select in terms of color and all that stuff, it could take anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks to have that vehicle built. And then I have to go through driver's training.
Oh man!
Because
you've got sympathy out there. Shorty just said, "Darlene, too funny. I had to learn how not to whiplash people. Not wheelchair bound, just really fucked up legs. Girl, the only way I actually got it was to imagine myself as that passenger who slams the glove compartment on braking, or the passenger whose head slammed the back seat when I accelerated. The struggle is real, Darlene.
Thank you, Shorty. I appreciate that." I just, I found that I did better with the hand controls, and I have to think about it, really think about it, because pushing forward or away from you is braking, pulling towards you is accelerating, but I did really well in the...
Man, that's counterintuitive.
It's counterintuitive, and the occupational therapist felt comfortable enough to have me drive us back to the facility, to the Easter Seals facility. She said, "Do you want to go on the back roads or the highway?" And I said, "I'm not ready for the highway." But the back roads were the frickin'...
Yeah, that was a trick question. Just a minute, Darlene. Stand by. We're back to that thing again. I'll have you in a second.
Okay, I think I got you.
Yeah, you're there.
Yeah, I can tell when you phase out.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That's a trick question, because the back roads are harder.
The back road, well, I felt more comfortable because there's less traffic, but the back roads are actually the city streets, the main drags of Meriden, and I was like, where are the back roads? Because where I live, we have back roads. So that's what I'm thinking. So it was kind of funny, but I actually... will welcome the driver's training. And I have a pretty spotless driving record. I'm a pretty good driver. I know people that shouldn't be on the road because they can't see. And I did very well on the visual and the cognitive part of the test, but I don't know, probably strength and flexibility. Well, probably not. I don't know. I can drive fine, so I have adjusted to my own weaknesses and probably use a lot of trick movements and don't think twice about it. So, but from their perspective, from the occupational therapist's perspective, there's an easier way for me to control a vehicle. So I'm looking forward to it, but it's going to take time. So if I was thinking, well, my ability to attend the Hornin would probably be extremely dicey early June, but if a rescheduled date I might be able to do it.
Yeah, we might.
We'll have to talk. We'll have to talk about accessibility, like the hotel, and there's so many other issues. A lot of things would have to fall into place, but it might. So I'm hopeful.
Well, at least I'm looking at different places, but the hotel itself is accessible. Nice, easy in, easy out, ground floor rooms, that kind of stuff. But I wanted to share this with you. This came from Steve in Georgistan. And he said, Darlene is an inspiration. As you probably know, with pancreatic issues, when recovering, you have good days and bad. I'm at the point that the good are outnumbering the bad. However, today is a bad day. But after listening to Darlene and her positive attitude, she lifted me right up.
Well, that was worth the phone call right there, Steve.
Exactly. And Lee in New York says, Honda Odyssey. I have one. Mine's unmodified. Mine's a 2001 with 171,000 miles. Believe it or not, I got a recall notice this week. Airbag problem. Parts not available.
Mm-hmm.
But that 171,000 miles speaks well of it.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think I'm going to be much happier with it. And I've already got her named. It's going to be Wanda the Honda.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Because my mother almost named me Wanda. So I was like, Wanda the Honda, I'm already ready for it.
But what color is it?
Don't know yet. I think I would like to get, it's like a dark, deep red color. But that could add another 2 to 4 weeks on getting the vehicle. The one that I sat in was white, which was not bad. So I'll have to make that determination, you know. But I'm going to have this vehicle. I don't want to say stuck with, because I never would select a minivan but for this disease. So to be positive, I'm going to have this vehicle probably for the next 10 to 15 years. So I think I'd rather pick something I know I'm going to be happy with, you know, for the next decade or more. And the color could be a factor in that. So I'll have to make that decision. And the price is significant, too, because, it's going to be more expensive for me to buy than the state to modify it.
Yeah.
Whereas it would have been the other way around with the Sienna. But I could see myself being really aggravated with the Sienna over time.
Well, again, those ergonomics, it doesn't sound like it was a fit.
It makes a big, big difference.
Well, you got a big laugh out of Shorty in L.A. LMAO, Wanda the Honda, with Kung Fu Grip.
Exactly. She's going to have that, too, because they have a special, low resistance steering. So there's a special, it's called a tripod thing. I don't know. They put it on the steering wheel, and I can literally rest my right hand, the wrist, and the hands grip the little prongs or whatever, and it's very easy to turn the wheel. It's like there's no resistance, and that helps because my shoulders are affected.
Oh, wow.
And because it's going to be highly responsive, I'm very much looking forward to and appreciating the driver's training, because I think I'm a pretty conscientious driver to begin with, but I want to be sure that my synapse. I want to be sure that my mind is thinking properly on how to control this vehicle, because it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, we can. If I had the clip handy, I might. Wait a second. This might be just the thing we need right now. Let's see. Um,
brain plasticity.
Ah.
That's what I was looking for. Brain plasticity. I want to be sure that I get the proper training and, like, even if it's like memoria technica or mnemonic devices or whatever it is that I need, because I really had to think about how to use the hand controls. And it was interesting because over 13 years ago when I worked with this state agency to do some modifications to my home, the gentleman who specialized in van modifications had said that he was surprised that not all vehicles, he was surprised that vehicles weren't operated by hand controls to begin with, because he said that your reflexes are faster with your hands than with your feet.
Well, and that's why I, when you said you push the lever forward to brake. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was thinking about the grip, the accelerator on a motorcycle. You know, you bring the accelerator toward you to accelerate, and then of course there's
no that's what I mean. I'm sorry. When I said you push away from you. So I'm thinking forward towards the windshield.
Ah.
That's braking. Pulling forward is accelerating.
Okay.
So it sounds like it's very much like a motorcycle. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still like it's a different way of driving for me.
Well, and it's about
it's
about unlearning.
Yes. Unlearning what I have learned. I don't know if that's a Star Wars reference or Star Trek reference or something. But, yeah, but I will appreciate that driver's training because maybe they can give me some tips, because I know reflectively I'm going to slam on that brake when it's the hand controls. So I want to I need the training on that, but. And there will be an accelerator and a brake pedal. It will still be there. So if I have to have somebody drive the vehicle for me, they'll be able to do it. Because I'll have a seat that can be installed, like you can slide it right in where the wheelchair would be. So if I needed to have, say, my brother take it for whatever, oil change or something like that.
Yeah.
He could drive it. So that's good, because these are all things that I'm like, well, how do I gas up? How do I do this? You know, these are all, it's a whole new way of doing stuff.
Well, I think you're going to be pleased with the Honda. Ron in the far frozen north, which ain't so frozen anymore, maybe, said, we've had 3 Honda Acura products. The one that lasted longest had 355,000 miles on it. The disappointment vehicle only lasted 265,000. My wife's current vehicle is an Acura RDX with about 60,000 miles on it, so it should be good for another 8 to 10 years. Every one of those old vehicles was still mechanically sound when we got rid of them because, as is typical for up here in the frozen north, the body would completely rust out. On one of my old CRVs, my mechanic told me that if I hit one good pothole, the body would fall apart in a cloud of rust and I'd be sitting in a skeleton of a vehicle. With a Honda, it's a matter of religious, regular maintenance. Mechanically, I think they could easily last for 500,000 miles if the body lasted.
Who said this?
Ron in the far frozen north.
Thank you, Ron, because that's what I'm being told. The problem with these, well, quote-unquote, problem with these vans, and this is what worries me, is that they completely restructure the van. They drop the floor anywhere from 6 to 12 inches so that I can drive a wheelchair into it with a ramp. So what tends to happen is that these vehicles tend to rust out quicker, like the brake lines can go, you know, things rust out. So the regular maintenance that Ron is talking about is critical, and this particular facility that I'm hoping will win the contract requires me to come in every 6 months, and they do a complete, you know, they do everything. They look at, they do the oil change. They look under the undercarriage. They check everything. They spray. They replace if anything looks like it's rusting or whatever. They take care of it, but it's critical you do the regular maintenance that Rod is talking about.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling better about it. I'm feeling better about it. And plus, Wanda will be garaged.
Very good.
So that's critical. So, all right. Well, I imagine there's other people that want to get on to talk to you, Bob. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to say very quickly that I see an article here that Chelsea – it sounds like Chelsea Manning had to – almost kill herself in order to be released from jail. Just saying. She tried to commit suicide, which is not funny, but I guess that a federal judge determined that her testimony is no longer necessary against that asshole,
Assange.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange.
He let her out and somebody else out as well, out of contempt. But the other one's going back to prison for hacking.
Oh, so, who? The other person?
Yeah. It wasn't an accomplice or anything. It was another witness whose testimony was sought. And,
well, I don't know what drove Chelsea Manning to try to kill herself. It's sad because you don't go through, you know, a gender change or transition like that only to kill yourself. I don't know what this individual, what she was experiencing in prison, but
suicide is a horrible problem in the trans community. But so is incarceration to any human being.
Definitely.
And now that we live in an era where you can just tell tell the court to take their subpoena and shove it, it probably seemed a little bit inequitable to the judge to maybe it seemed inequitable to the judge to let all of these maggots skate while she sits there and rots. And of course it we have to remember.
I don't hear you anymore, Bob.
Oh, no, I'm still here and you're still connected. We lost Arlene. But managed to hang on for a good long while. But the thing is, it's worth remembering that is testimony that neither Bill Barr nor Donald Trump ever wanted to be taken in the first place. Sparky asking, what the fuck is that beeping noise? That beeping noise is someone trying to call in while there's another call on the line, because I have not successfully disabled call waiting on this on the stress line phone. Let's see here. Arnold, if you want to jump back in, that's cool. Arnold was trying to get in on the stress line there. Hey, thank you very kindly to Brendan. Thanks a ton, Brendan. That takes it. We finally got off the goose egg, and that means we're down. We're down to $470 to go. There we go. We've got four. But thank you, Brendan, for getting us started. Thank you very much. Ralph said maybe around Bridge Day for the gathering. And at this point in time, I won't be able to come to the gathering, but I can probably buy some of the Kickstarter products. I need to take care of my kittens. I understand. Bridge Day would be a lovely time, but also a horrible time because there's no hotel rooms available. But it might not be too crummy, like, say, the weekend after Bridge Day or a couple of weekends before, maybe. It's all hard to tell. Or maybe, you know, late July, early August. But folks have to have a chance to try to get plane fare and make appropriate preservations, as a buddy of mine used to say. Ron says, what's with the cricket sound? Well, the cricket sound is that's my ringtone. I was trying to find the softest ringtone I could find, and that was the cricket was about the best one there was. But Arnold's with us. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, Bob. So rather than you having to try to read all my texts, I just want to address the last call.
Okay, yeah. When I saw you trying to call, I had a feeling that maybe you were going to bring your expertise to bear in regard to Darlene's automotive adventure.
Yeah. So if you were looking at them used, the way they join the floor pans on the lowered vans to the original bodies is they rust right there. The metal that they use for the drop parts is so heavy compared to the gauge used in the body that there is a heavy oxidation that happens. They're really bad quickly. It also adds a substantial amount of weight to the vehicle, so your stock suspension, bushings and stuff like that, do get beat up a bit much just from normal driving because of the added weight. If I was going to buy from new, I would go Honda. I've had experience with Dodge conversions, minivans. Our local nursing home where I had several family members that worked, they've had Honda Odysseys, they've had mini, Grand Caravans, they've had Siennas, they've had the Ford whatever it is product that was awful.
I was going to say that was the Ford Don't Buy It, wasn't it?
Exactly. You know it's bad when I tell you to buy a Grand Caravan over whatever Ford's offering is. So basically, that's all I wanted to say was that the Honda would be my choice from new, knowing ahead of time that it's going to be much heavier, knowing ahead of time that the way they're assembled, they can't help but rusting there. If she can wash it frequently this time of year, that would be helpful when we do have a salty winter. And keeping it inside will definitely help. Because it should get to melt every night when it is snow loaded, so that will be great. And beyond that, just regular maintenance, and Hondas live forever. They just do.
You mentioned the Ford, I'm still stinging and pissed off over the warranty screw over that I took, and I'm waiting for my mechanic to get my purge valve in. Even though there, you can, if you look up purge valve Ford, you find, well, they recalled the damn Fusion over it, but there's no recall on mine.
So what happens, and I love all these manufacturers for this. I'm reminded of a dump truck that we had in here a bunch of years ago now. It shares the same master cylinder as a Cadillac and the one-ton Chevy and the one-ton GMC, and it's in a bunch of, subs. And in the Cadillac VINs of the same year range, it's recalled. You bring the truck in, you get a free master cylinder. If that problem exists on a non-Cadillac VIN of the same vintage, same part number as far as replacement master cylinder, they will not recall and or warranty replace that unit. GM wants nothing to do with it. If it's not one of the Cadillac batches, they're not touching it. And the resolution for the problem is to replace the master cylinder, which cost at the time about $600 to the customer.
Damn.
And yeah, and if you happen to have a Cadillac variant, you got it for free. And it was a flaw. It was a manufacturing defect. It would overbrake to the left front wheel. That's what it did. It would path of least resistance. It was the shortest line. It was the overbraked wheel. It's an easy fix, and GM chose to not do anything about it. And then, years later, you hear about the ignition switch situation. Ford had a bunch of that stuff, too. You never hear – I don't know if you've ever heard this joke, but Fords burn, okay? So if you have a Ford, it might be on fire right now. Like, if you can't see it, it might be burning.
Thanks.
So it's also Ford faith, too. So in the sense that if you believe in your Ford, you might not be failed by it. That's a whole other thing. But the thing about the Ford has issues, 97 to 03, pretty much fleet-wide, they run a constant power to their master cylinder for the brake light alert if you have no fluid. And that constant power switch sometimes burns those vehicles. So E-series vans, F-series trucks, Tauruses, the minivan, the Escorts, they can all burn from this constant power switch in the master cylinder. And that should have been recalled, but Ford was like, nah, what's a couple thousand units? It's no big deal. They're all guilty of it. Every last manufacturer. Honda's not perfect either. They had a bunch of issues when they first went to fly-by-wire throttle in the mid-2000s, you know, 04-05, on the Accord. It was a nightmare. Those cars would take off by themselves. It never made the news, but anybody who fixes cars, we all live through it. You know, they would high idle, they would take off, you'd shift to second gear, and they would, like, self-accelerate and all kinds of goofy crap. They had to be calibrated. Yeah. And I love Honda, so I really don't like to talk shit about them, but when they're wrong, they're wrong, you know.
Well, you've got a big thank you from Darlene. She says, I'm feeling much better about my choice. And she said, P.S., Braun Ability is no longer converting the Dodge Caravan, so that eliminated that vehicle from the list.
Mm-hmm.
She says, because of the wheelchair being the driver's seat, my choices were limited, but it sounds like I made the best choice possible.
Yeah, we had a Honda Pilot here for a while that was here for a bunch of service, and then we wound up selling it. Was converted for wheelchair driving, and then they had a bolt like a clip-in seat with the original seat on this platform. And when so you wanted to have a non-disabled person drive, you would simply put this fixture back in place, and it had like the floor segment and everything, but it would clip into the wheelchair holder. And all the original controls were still present. It was quite involved, but it was fabulous. But that particular vehicle had been left to sit for a bunch of years and got rusty from, like, just sitting in grass. Kind of sad, actually.
No, that'll happen. That's not good for them.
Yep. No, you're better off racking miles on than letting them sit. So anyway, we're not doing a car show. I just wanted to call and give my 2 cents.
Oh no, and, I'm up for doing a car show because I'm waiting. I'm still waiting for my purge valve to come in, and I'd rather give my mechanic the money than give it to those the ripoff artists over at the dealership in Beckley.
So you have a brand new car, 18, 19, 20, something like that.
It's a 16.
So it's a 16, and so what was the mileage when you picked it up?
I bought it with 29.
29, and you need a purge valve already.
Yeah.
Now, is it down like can't be driven, or is
No. It's the check engine light came on, so I took it over. They charged me $100 to tell me what the check engine light wanted, and then they wanted another $300 to do the labor and the part.
Oh. At $29,000, you would think Ford would just fix it.
Well, no, I bought it at 29. It's just crossed 40.
Oh, well, it's still a baby.
Yeah, well, it came out of a rental fleet and entered service in Paramus, New Jersey.
Oh no! Well, that means it could have high hours on it. We have to. That's the other thing. Like, so you low miles, high hours, lots of traffic, lots of carbon, terrible fuel. You have an emissions county? Do you have to have emissions testing for inspection?
No.
So you should never care your engine light comes on ever again. Just check your oil, make sure it's, you know, golden and honey colored. And you need to get yourself an OBD2 scanner and read the codes and Google them and know which ones you can ignore. If you don't have emissions to be concerned about, I mean...
Well, but what I read up on the purge valve is that it can cause the damn thing to fuel starve and just lose all power at full speed, you know, on the interstate. And I've been through that with my rusty red Dodge truck and a couple of other Mopar vehicles, and not being able to accelerate once you were doing 70 miles an hour and there's a semi coming bearing down on your ass. And you don't have a shoulder to lay off on.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to go through that again. So I'm getting.
Well, here's the thing. What you mentioned is why it's happening that way is that whole vehicle, you have fly-by-wire throttle. So when you step on the throttle pedal in the cabin, the computer determines how much throttle is actually going to be applied. And it uses a variety of inputs to make that determination. It also uses air from a variety of places. And one of them is going to be taking the vapor off the tank and cycling EGR emissions. So if it's actually causing the vehicles in your model series to die on the side of the road, they are actually using that vapor as part of the program. And so when it's not present, no good. That's amazing that Ford would make that.
But if you really want the fun season in hell stuff, read up on the Focus transmission.
Oh yeah, that's a nightmare. Yeah, I know about that. Yeah. Yep. And how about the my favorite is the Coyote engine series. So all the 5-liter stuff where broken pistons, cracks in the cylinder wall, porosity in the cylinder wall. You know, these engines are $10,000, and they're just failing all over the place. So
and
I actually know somebody
kinda,
with a...
It kind of bums me out because this year Ford is reintroducing the Bronco.
Oh, I know. And it's for as news crap goes, it's actually kind of cute. So, but it's going to be a no-buy. It's got some world engine in it, so it's going to be junk. So, but anyway, on the virus front, locally here, my toilet paper aisle at ShopRite this morning was like a football game. People had, you know, they were just like, you know, going for the stuff, man. You know, normal everywhere else in the store, I swear to God, it was bizarre. But in the TP aisle, people were making sure that they had their toilet paper. Almost every cart I see had toilet paper. One lady bought like multiple things of regular napkins, and I gave her a smile because, like, you know what she was thinking. She was thinking, I'm wiping my ass with anything. Come on, that's funny. it's funny to me. It's not funny, but it's funny that people are reacting in the way they are. I mean, you know, I think we're going to see some mass quarantines or self, you know, however you want to call it. People are going to want to self quarantine, isolate, whatever. And I think there's a certain amount of that that's good, but this is not going to go away in 2 weeks. This is going to be a multi-year deal that this goes in waves. It's going to rev up for a while.
We're going to have to ride with it for a while. Hope they get a vaccine out, and then hope that everybody can get the damn vaccine.
And we also got to hope that, I mean, of course we don't want to have loss of life that we know we're going to have, but on the grand scheme of things, the impact to the economy that's going to happen and is happening, you know, we have to kind of hope that the people that make it have some kind of order and normalcy after this. Not to be like crazy sounding, but enough disruption and you could almost rewrite normal after.
Yeah. This is what I mean when I've been talking for low these many years about the fragility of our society, the fragility of our culture. I mean, I'm just looking at a headline right now. American Airlines pilot has tested positive for COVID-19. And so does that mean you turn around, you tell everybody who's been on every flight that he's piloted since, for the last 15 days?
Yeah.
That's going to be a shit ton of people, especially if it's a big plane.
Yeah. And, maybe he's one of those pilots that's like the smiling fool when you walk on, you know, coughing and breathing on everybody. You don't know, you know. Oh boy!
Yeah, you may have heard me saying earlier to Darlene, you know, I'm gonna know how bad it's gonna be in my neck of the woods just by seeing how many cars are in the church parking lot on Sunday. Well, here's an even more profound example of that. There are 13,000 members of the First Baptist Church of Dallas, and this that vile, hate-filled POS, Robert Jeffress, who is a big-time maggot and thinks that the sun shines out Donald Trump's ass. Well, he's going to keep church open this Sunday because he's doing a book signing to hustle his fucking book.
What an idiot. Yeah, I was supposed to go to Boston, and we canned all that. And then the venue canceled the show anyway.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's maddening.
Well, maybe the whole church will get sick, and they won't be there anymore.
You know, that would be if they could. But see, if they're willing to go to church, that means they're willing to go out into the rest of civil society and keep sickening people.
Yeah, they're going to go to church, and then they're going to... Oh, they can't go to Chick-fil-A. They're closed on Sunday, right?
Right, but they'll go to church, and, I mean, is Luby's still a going concern, Luby's cafeteria chain? Baptists are big on cafeterias after church. Or Bob Evans.
Or Country Buffet, or one of them places where you can sneeze all over everything.
Right, and you know anywhere that they've got an opportunity to write a Bible verse on the check and leave a dime under the coffee cup for a fucking tip, fucking Baptists.
Can you imagine being like? I can't even think about doing that. Like, it's not even like. If you know somebody's working for tips, like, because, you know, $2 an hour isn't really a living, how could you leave them a dime?
Oh, in the name of Jesus, Arnold. In the name of Jesus. I mean, I've seen it with my own eyes in the Boob Evans over across the river.
Boob Evans, I like that one. That's fun.
Yeah. it's disgusting. But, I mean, that's how it's going to spread. And then remember this. Eventually, you know, that year and a half out that Dr. Fauci's talking about, when there's a vaccine, if there's a vaccine, once there's a vaccine, we're going to have to contend with the anti-vaxxers.
Right.
Who will swear that, you know, it causes your nose to slide off or something. And so it's going to be critical that we reach that herd immunity level, but we probably won't. And remember that even with a flu vaccine, I had to pay, you know, I had to pay cash money for mine. You know, covered under most plans. Well, if you don't have a plan, it ain't covered.
Right. That's crazy, too. Yeah. I mean, that's going to, you know, how many people do we all know that have, like, awful insurance or no insurance still?
Right.
That's a big...
27.5 million are uninsured, and then God knows how many tens of millions underinsured.
Right. Yeah, it's going to get fun. Do you have any information? I don't know if you talked about it before I tuned in. Like New York had a bunch of people that they were like doing something with the National Guard. And have you heard about any of that?
Yeah, New Rochelle, National Guard. I haven't heard that being expanded.
What are they doing what is the National Guard's role?
To keep people from going in or coming out, supposedly, except under the strictest of circumstances. But then again, you get that one reporter's tweet that I shared a little bit ago, where he flies from Paris, you know, with the new rules in place and everything, he flies from Paris to New York. And just sails right through. They don't even ask him if he's had the sniffles.
Wow.
And he went through on the one method. His wife goes through typical returning customs stuff, and all they say to her is, "You've been to China? No. Okay, come on through."
Oh man.
And all of this is stuff that floats, that rolls downhill from the idiocy at the top.
Just because we have incompetency on all levels of government right now.
And I watched that thing last night. I was trying to do my job, do my due diligence. And so Agnes and I just watched it together. And both of us were sitting there with our mouths hanging open, catching flies. Because it's like, this can't be real. And
yeah.
He's talking about the market. He doesn't say anything about the tests. He's huffing. He's huffing and puffing. He can barely breathe. They've got 16 extra layers of pumpkin-colored makeup on his face. And then he gets caught on a hot mic after it's all over.
Oh, yeah, what do you say on the hot mic?
Not a lot, but it was like, ho-hum.
He's like, well, parts of that I did see.
And
he looked like a zombie.
And let's be absolutely clear. He has been exposed to people who have active cases.
Good times.
No,
well, he sounded sick the other night. He really did.
Well, right. Well, you know, the third press conference, he didn't even show up for it. The first two, he ran away as soon as he could. But the last one, he didn't even show up for. And last night, they do it from the Oval Office. And he can barely even read. I think he was Adderall'd out of his goddamn mind.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I was looking for the clip, but I don't have it immediately to hand.
I can't believe he's our president. It doesn't make any sense. It's like living through a bad movie. And you know, when you have something like this virus going on, you want that comfort in knowing that the people who are making the decisions are making decent decisions based on good science, available data, I have no confidence in his decision-making ability at this point in time and where he'll get his information from to make rational decisions, which I don't think he can make. So.
Well, and how is this rational, Arnold? Consider he's been exposed, but he's still boasting that my rally in Florida is sold out. Now, we're talking about something scheduled for Tampa on March the 25th. Trump just declared his rally in Florida, which has not been announced for Tampa on March 25th because aides have tried to get him not to do it, is all sold out.
Oh, wow. Will his maggots go to it?
If he filled a stadium with pig shit and told him he was going to be there, they'd stand in it up to their necks.
That's crazy.
That's
absolutely crazy.
Well, it's how you make bad matters worse.
Well, if they go make it to the sick, I mean, too bad they have to come back. Like, can we quarantine them when they get there?
Can we quarantine them in the stadium?
Yeah.
No. I think he, I don't know, because remember, Stephen Miller's back there in the background too. Brad Parscale is. I think they're trying to get America sick enough that we can't hold the election.
Oh.
Now, on the other hand, Georgia just shut down their state legislature, period.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do they have confirmed cases, or they just don't want?
No, they got confirmed cases. I'm pretty sure. Oh, yeah. Let's see. According to the Johns Hopkins map, 31 confirmed cases in Georgia.
Wow. it suddenly makes world travel seem kind of silly when you realize how quick something like this can pop off.
Yeah. As Ron in the far frozen north pointed out, I wish terminal ignorance was a real thing. You know, your stupid just rises to a certain level and then you're gone.
You poof, you're gone. Yeah, no, I get it. That's cool.
But it's,
well, you know, I there would be a lot. There'd be a lot of people around me that would be gone. Tell you what.
Yeah. And see, I haven't even gotten to the fact that. Oh, by the way, we're still getting our war on. We launched a bunch of airstrikes in Iraq in the last few hours.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, all that. I'll be great.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and that's a distraction too. Like, you know, rather than talk about real problems, let's escalate global conflict. You know, we got to make Lockheed Martin a bunch of money. That's the awful thing about it. I mean,
and I think Trump referenced him by saying, "We've launched attacks all over Iraq."
Oh, he's such an idiot. I hope this is over soon. You know, and I don't want to. You know, hopefully I won't get you a bunch of hate mail for this. But I'm not excited about Joe Biden. You know,
I understand.
I'd rather put like 6 9-volt batteries in series and stick them on my tongue for like 45 minutes than
Marty.
Actually vote.
I get that, but we're gonna wind up with a ballot that is what it is, not what we want.
And
the answer to what I want, I still haven't endorsed a candidate. I just say I'm going to vote for the nominee because I think that's the responsible thing for me to do.
I agree.
But if I had my druthers, I would like to have a president who will not be, for instance, entering the single highest mortality demographic for this disease.
Yeah, no doubt. Unfortunately, I don't think anybody younger in the field was the right candidate either. I mean, Mayor Pete, not doing it. You know, I already forgot who he was.
That's the thing. But he and Amy were never in it to win it. They were there kind of cold trailing Biden in case his campaign blew up like every other campaign he's ever run did.
Right.
And so once he gets past South Carolina and you see the numbers that you see, then it's okay for them to drop out.
What happens now with Biden and the general? Don't we all kind of agree that without real like energy and enthusiasm behind him, which I don't think it's I don't want to say it, but don't we just wind up with Trump again? Isn't that what happens?
No, Arnold.
Okay.
I don't think there's any fair comparison between Trump and Biden. They're not even remotely the similar.
You're
afraid we wind up with Trump again.
Right.
I think Hillary was sui generis because she'd had a 25-year hundreds of millions, if not billion-dollar campaign run against her since, going all the way back to the presidential campaign days of 1991 and 1992. Okay,
right.
And they ran it, and they ran it, and they fine-tuned it until it was 16 cylinders, running on an 8-barrel carb, and just growling and. And the minute they touched, whoo, and it was ready to go, okay?
Yep.
All of that is what they did with Hillary, which is different than just saying, John Kerry is the most goddamn liberal since V.I. Lenin, with the understanding that whoever the Democratic candidate is, according to the Republicans, going to be the most goddamn liberal candidate since Stalin. That's just how they operate. And I'm at a place in my life and have been for a very long time, Arnold, where I just refuse to treat politicians like goddamn rock stars or movie stars.
Yep, okay? I understand.
Unlike Chris Matthews, there aren't any politicians that send a tingle down my leg.
All right? Oh, my God.
And so I can look at this very clear-eyed, and I can say that I'm excited to vote for whomever is the Democratic nominee because I want to see children let out of cages and concentration camps. I'm excited to see parents reunited with children they thought they would never see again. I'm excited to not have a president who has been credibly accused of fucking rape, handsy or too touchy or inappropriately friendly, but been credibly accused of fucking rape more than 24 times. I'm not yelling at you.
I know that, and
I am excited about that. I'm excited to get somebody into the White House who isn't going to treat the presidency like a fucking pop machine that's been turned into a long neck beer bottle machine that you only have to pay a dime for in a fraternity house. All right.
It's amazing to me that, you know, like when I think about Trump as the president, when I think about the person who he was before he was ever in office, and then you realize that that clown who couldn't make money with a casino is in charge of allegedly in charge of anything. It's really, really, really just, oh, it's painful. Can't wait for it to be over. I hope that Joe brings enough enthusiasm to people that they actually go vote.
Well, the bottom line for me, I think the determinant on that is not going to be Joe, Arnold. It's going to be his running mate. And that will be a new place for us, too, because people never vote for who the running mate is. But given the fact that, you know, and this applies to whether it's Bernie or Joe, they're both going to be octogenarian presidents, which has never happened in the history of this country. And so the odds are better than even that whomever is the running mate is going to wind up the president. And the only way that Joe can hope to keep people motivated is to make a woman his running mate. So, and it can't be a senator. Let's be clear about that. Because it's going to be hard enough to wrest control of the Senate away without turning them around and immediately having game-changing special election in a state where losing one Democratic senator can fuck everything up.
So then, who would it be then?
I don't know. You need a woman at least, and preferably a woman of color.
Wow.
And then that's how we get our first female president, because Bernie or Biden are at least a 50-50 chance to drop dead in office. And for the record, for any little lurking maggots, so is Trump.
Yeah, if he had a Big Mac today, he could be dead tonight. I mean, that's the reality there. I mean, you know, full size, mega American supersized Coke and a Big Mac and a bunch of greasy fries and poof.
It may be more a matter of just shaking one more hand. I'm not kidding. I mean, he's taking he's. You know, Pence said in his press conference, I'm going to keep shaking hands. I'm a politician. We shake hands, you fool.
Well, we'll see how it goes with that. And then the other part of it is, Trump thought he survived. It was the 80s was his Vietnam. So he thinks that he can skate, unaffected through. We'll see if that works this time.
Yeah, and of course, Ivanka has been run, apparently, according to reporting, Precious Princess Iwanka Madaddy Trump has been running a campaign, running a number on Pence for well over a year. She wants Pence gone, and she wants what the reports are, the gossip, I guess. She wants Nimrata Haley to be his vice president to try to calm and bring back into the fold some of those white women suburban voters that abandoned him as if he had the plague in 2018.
So none of those people have realized that she's not white yet, have they?
Oh, no. That's a selling point. See, we're Republicans. We can elect coloreds.
Oh, gee whiz. Oh my God.
It makes my brain hurt how good I am at thinking like these fuckers. It's not a nice place to be.
For a bunch of years I couldn't do my Southern voice, so it's really I'm out of practice. But I think I'm going to have to fire up the character again because there's so many things to make fun of. Oh, it's endless.
Yeah, and so much of it, since we're dealing with maggots, begs for a cornpone accent.
Yeah, oh, I absolutely have to do it. Yeah.
Well, Arnold, you take care of yourself.
I'm not going to embarrass myself here now, but so I'm going to bail.
All right, give my regards to my buddy Rick, would you?
I will do that. Yep, I'll see you. I'll be talking to him this evening, so I'll let him know.
All right, sounds good. Take care.
Good night, everybody. You too, man. Bye bye.
And so we find ourselves at past the end of the program. I've been running over a little bit lately. That's okay. Thank you, Brendan, for being our lone in-show contributor this evening. Thank you very kindly. That means a lot. We will be at $670 tomorrow, so we're back to a Horn community-made miracle. But thank you, Brendan. And thanks to all of our subscribers, PayPal, Patreon, a la carte contributors. You're how this all stays on the air. Darlene with a note says, thanks, Arnold. Biden, to me, is the classic example of a politico that fails upward. Looks like the GOP isn't the only party immune to this. A horn listener, he knows who he is, and I thank him profusely, invited me last night to join a closed Facebook group on Bernie, AOC, and others of the squad, and I was stunned to see all these old videos of Biden's penchant for doing a melanoma over and over again, i.e. plagiarizing more intelligent Dems such as Robert Kennedy et al. Biden is not an intelligent man, and he and Jill are not nice people. Make no mistake about it. That said, and of course the that said part, is whomever is the nominee gets my vote. Precisely. So that brings us to the end of things. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, no matter how you so do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. Keep washing your hands.